Good evening, and welcome to the March 5th, 2019 regularly scheduled meeting of San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board. I'm first going to report out in our closed session items, and you may see us passing some paperwork around, but there are just some things that require signatures that we'll be taking care of. In closed session, the board voted on items 3.01, or I'm going to ask for a vote, on item 3.01, student personnel stipulated expulsion hearing. Do I have a motion with regard to that item?
I'll so move.
Thank you. A second? I'll second. All in favor of the recommendation, please so state. This is with regard to 3.01, a stipulated expulsion. I'm seeking a vote. We need to vote in open session on these. We have a motion and a second. Aye.
I'll second.
Thank you. 3.02.
I'm voting no on that.
All right. We have five ayes, one nay, and Mr. Unger is absent this evening. With regard to 3.02?
I'll move to approve.
Thank you. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Item 3.03?
I'll move the stipulated expulsion, approval of the stipulated expulsion on 3.03.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Motion carries. And item 3.04, stipulated expulsion.
I'll move the stipulated expulsion agreement.
I'll second.
All right. We have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, a second by Mrs. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thank you. And then we also had a conference with labor negotiators. And we also have a confidential resolution. All right. In closed session, the governing board adopted a confidential resolution to issue a notice of non-reelection to a probationary secondary classroom teacher pursuant to Education Code Section 44929.21B. Effective at the end of the 2018-2019 school year, and directed the superintendent or designee to send out appropriate legal notices. The motion to adopt the resolution was made by Walter Millar and seconded by Marilyn Roger. The roll call vote was as follows: Ellen Sheffer, Marilyn Roger, Mark Buckman, Catherine Eisendrath Rogers, Evelyn Frame, Walt Millar, all voted aye, and Chris Unger is absent. That takes care of our closed session items. Do we have consensus on the order of business for this evening? Okay. So we have one student representative to the board this evening. Did I leave out our minute? Did I skip right by? Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Millar. We have board minutes from two meetings. I would seek a motion on approval of the minutes of February 14th.
I'll move approval.
I'll second.
All right. Thank you.
I have a correction.
Yes, Mr. Millar.
I was actually absent for that meeting, contrary to the minutes.
All right. Mrs. Campbell, will you correct that, please? That's right. Okay. Mr. Buckman. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And an abstention, Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Okay. and the minutes of February 19th, 2019.
I'll move the minutes of February 19th, approval of the minutes of February 19th.
Thank you. Any discussion, corrections? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you. Mrs. Campbell, do you have that? I'm sorry, I'm not keeping very good track here. Now we will move on to our student representatives to the board. Thank you for coming.
Okay. So this February we had our annual Sweethearts Dance, which is basically a parent figure and child dance, which is open to all of the elementary schools in the district. And it's super fun just to see all of them come out all dressed up, like going to their first high school dance, I guess. And it's just a lot of fun for all the high school students that are there, as well as the parents and their children. We also had something new this year called Say Something Week, which basically promoted speaking up against, like, just other students saying things that might be, like, self-harmful to themselves or just anything concerning. So we just tried to push, like, speaking up just for the betterment of themselves and the entire school. And that went pretty well. And then last week we had finals, which means third trimester started today, and our new math building opened up, which is really cool. Everyone loves the new modern classrooms and the clean bathrooms. So, yeah, so we have a lot in tail for third trimester, so we're super excited. And, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, and I'm excited to go visit the new building with classrooms in place and kids learning and all that. Yeah, great. Thank you. All right. Thank you for coming. As always, you are most welcome to stay, but if you need to move on with your new third trimester, we understand. Thank you. All right. Next, we have a presentation of Bishop's Peak Program Highlights.
Yes, good evening. I'm proud to introduce Dan Block, who will tell us about the activities going on at Bishop's Peak Elementary School. Mr. Block.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Thanks for having us tonight. I'm here to introduce some students, their fifth grade in Mrs. King's class, Mary Kate, Parker, Abby, and PJ, and along with Mrs. King. Throughout last year, I came to you guys and talked a little bit about STEAM and talked about some of the things we're going to infuse technology, the arts, into our curriculum. That starts for us again next week. If any of you want to come by, it's 11 to 12. Third through sixth grade are going to be rotating into different classrooms. But in addition to that, Emily has done a great job, Mrs. King, of leading staff development to get all of our teachers and staff to use technology. At the last staff meeting, she did something about creating goals with technology. With her students, she's always using the tech, and they're going to highlight some of the ways they use tech in their classroom. So, Mrs. King, students, come on up.
Thank you for the introduction. Good evening. I'm Emily King. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for having us here tonight, members of the board. I am really proud to introduce the following students from my fifth grade class at Bishop's Peak. This year, we have embarked on a new challenge, creating Google Sites to display and share our accomplishments throughout the year. These students here tonight have chosen some elements of their Google Sites that they've created to share with you. Please enjoy their work and get ready to learn a lot.
Creating the sites really made me think back about what we have done in class. I think back to my best work and activities I did with partners and groups. I try to keep things neat, and I'm always proud to look through my past work and find awesome artifacts. This slide shows our team getting ready for a presentation. I put my very best work on my site, and I'm always proud to share my best work, and making a site is a good way to do so.
Good evening. My name is Patterson. This slide shows my reading accomplishments this winter. I include a report on Muhammad Ali, a page about when to use quotation marks, and also a book I am reading. I also studied a media source when researching sharks. I listened to the video and took notes. For example, did you know that sharks have been on the planet 450 million years? That's longer than the dinosaurs.
I am representing Mariah. She would like to teach you about page menus and backgrounds. As you see here, this is a page menu that has subpages, which I had to drag and drop into place. Let's take a closer look at winter writing. It took a while to adjust the background so that I could read the little title. Miss King and I figured out how to adjust readability, and it worked out great. Hi, I'm Abby. Adding on to Mariah, this page background has chosen to show my personality, but also related to the theme of the page. Lower down on the specific page, I included information like my Lexile, recent tests and assignments, and reading log entries. On my next slide, it features some standards for our grade that we are working on in trimester 2. I chose samples that match the goal for 5th grade.
Hello, my name is Parker, and in the making of this Google site, we have layouts, we have layout options. We have areas where we can insert pictures, text boxes, captions, and much more. I personally recommend the fourth layout you see, which is highlighted in purple, to display work in reading, writing, and math. And here is a page in my site where I have used this layout.
Thank you for listening.
They're available if you have any questions. Do you guys have any questions?
Oh, okay.
You
want to
answer? We'll see if they have any questions.
That's okay. We didn't really talk about that part.
Also, I just wanted to say one more thing. So the presentation tonight, we presented it through slides. We keep our Google sites private just within our own accounts and to share with our families and our teacher, but because it has information about our scores and our testing and all that and our goals, they're not really public to everyone. However, we'd be happy to share some samples of certain pages if you want more information and just to kind of demonstrate that as well. So that's why it looks a little different than a site.
Thank you. So I have a quick question. Did you learn how to do all of this just in the regular classroom, or was it part of your usual instruction day, or did you have special days to learn this? How did you gain this knowledge?
Ms. King taught us how to use it, and if we needed any extra help, we could raise our hand, and she would help us understand it better.
Great. Thank you. And Ms. King, how did you learn how to do all this?
Well, as an ed tech leader, I kind of taught myself through some tutorials online. I taught Google Sites at one of our techie boot camps a couple of summers ago. And with some help of some other teachers, we just have been developing it. And it's very simple. I do some web design myself just as a hobby, and it's really simple and beautiful design. So kudos to Google for making it easy for all of us.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments, Mr. Buck?
So I think you just answered my question. So this is website design, basically. Okay, so you guys are all set, so I need help. So I'll be in touch.
Yes, you won't know where to find us.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Our next item is 5.03, Board Priority 1, LCAP Focus Area 3, Student Senate Draft Recommendations. Dr. Prater.
Well, this is an exciting evening of student-focused presentations. And so tonight what I'd like to do is introduce our lead administrators who work with our student senators. We meet once a month here in J2. And the student senators represent the middle schools and the high schools in our district. So there are 5 groups of students. There's approximately 70 student senators that represent each of the 5 schools. And I am so incredibly proud of the work they're doing. I've shared with you already that this is our third year of running the Student Senate. And more and more, we are getting better than the previous year at refining our message and really trying to drill down to make sure that students have a voice that is linked to action for improving the conditions for which they learn at school. And so tonight you'll hear draft SMART goals that have been based on multiple months of gathering information from the Youth Truth survey that we provided to all of our secondary, middle and high school students. To I think our participation rate is around 92% of all secondary students participated in this survey, which asked a whole range of questions around student engagement, safety, drug and alcohol use, and just an overall sense of well-being on campus. The student senators took that information and they have worked with one another to figure out what are the things that are going well at their school and what are the things that they need to work on and improve, especially through the lens of equity. And like I said, I am super proud of them. I appreciate that they've made their way out here. This is their first draft of their SMART goals, which will move forward to their site councils at their local sites. The students will sit and meet with their teachers and administrators to share these goals, gather their feedback, the faculty's feedback, refine those goals, and then ultimately these will land in the single school plans for at their particular sites, as well as you'll see evidence of these in our LCAP in the months of May and June. So this is action-oriented stuff. This isn't lighthearted. These are really well thought out goals and expectations the students have generated. Thank you. So I'd like to start with Los Osos Middle School and Mr. Bloom.
Hello, members of the board. I would like to introduce Eli Waldman. Come on up here, bud. Eli is a sixth grader here. He's one of 18 senators that we have. We have a large group of senators because we wanted good representation from sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. So Eli is going to share with you kind of what we've been doing and talk about our SMART goals.
So, as you might have heard before, we have three main goals, and I'm going to talk about those three right now. So, we want to have more rigor and relevance. So, we want students to feel more like that the work that they're getting is helping them learn, and not just like a workload that they have to finish and turn in. And we want to do this by figuring out how to make assignments that are like not assignments that you can just Google the answers or just copy and paste them. So we want to have more assignments like science experiments and things where you get to choose your own topic and get to research like obscure topics that you don't really get to figure out about unless you get to, unless you're assigned to figure that out. Our second goal is a connection between students and teachers, and we want students to feel like they have at least one teacher at school that they can talk to about a personal problem. And Loam's is going to try to do this by having teachers like greet their students and talk to them like they would talk to like a good friend or things like that. And our third goal is to connection to real life or relevance, and we're trying to connect some of the lessons we're doing to jobs in the world and also college and career readiness. And we want to connect students to jobs that they can do from things that they're learning in class, like a mathematician or an archaeologist and things like that. And so we've already started talking to our teachers about this, and our teachers are already starting to do this. Like, both of my teachers now greet everybody at the door, and it just feels really good. And I feel like I could definitely talk to a teacher about a personal problem. So we've been meeting with the Student Senate a lot and going over our goals and refining them. And at one point, we actually met with the teachers, and each student senator sat down with a teacher or two, and they talked to them about our goals and asked the teachers what they think they could do in their classroom to improve these goals. And the teachers had a lot of great ideas, and we're already working our way to improving our goals for 2020. So we've actually started in the past week. We've started sharing out an advisory with the students about our goals. And today I actually went to a teacher's classroom with two other student senators, and we talked about how we're working on these goals, what the Student Senate is, what the Youth Truth Data was for, and all of that stuff that you already probably know. But the students seem glad that there's like kids trying to help improve the school from like a kid's point of view. And so Loams is on its way to improving, but we're not there yet. We're still refining our goals more and still have room to improve, but we're on our way. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Any questions for Eli? Thank you. That was a very informative presentation, and you're working hard. We appreciate the feedback.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We adults need to get out of the way sometimes.
Yes, we do.
They're pretty amazing. I'd like to introduce another amazing group of students from Morro Bay High, Rosalie Ronzon and Sydney Beckett. Fresh out of the pool, by the way.
Ms. Campbell actually just shared a presentation with you. I think our supervisor might have forgotten to, if that's okay. Yeah, right there. Okay, so hi. As Dr. Prater introduced us, I'm Rosalie Rollinson, and this is Sydney Beckett. We're from Morro Bay High School, and we are going to kind of give you an abbreviated version of our SMART goals for your sake and for ours, as these can be very long. So first I'm going to go over our SMART goals, and then after that we're going to talk about our implementation timeline. Our first SMART goal is college and career readiness. This is a repeat from one of ours last year. We felt that the numbers didn't jump high enough, so we wanted to go over it again. So what we identified, which is this kind of like our specific, a lot of students feel like they don't know what they want to do after high school, which is completely understandable. But it is Morro Bay High's responsibility to give students an idea of what they enjoy. We plan to support this by bringing in professionals from a variety of career fields to give presentations about, like, say a construction worker can come in and talk about geometry in construction building or something like that, or like a professor. We hope to see a positive increase in the Youth Truth Survey questions relating to college and career readiness next fall when we take this again. We hope to start implementing this by next year, and we also do know that it might take a whole nother year for it to kind of gain effect since we take this in October. And like I said, change during 2019 fall, but it might end up being 2020.
So our second goal for Morro Bay High School was academic engagement and rigor. So we identified it as a group of students that tend to have an unnecessary amount of nightly homework on a constant basis. Because of this, we decided to focus this goal on asking teachers to review their curriculum, reduce the amount of work if necessary, and increase their context purpose for the 2019 fall school year. This change should show an increase in assignments turned in and an increase in the scores of the work. And our last SMART goal, which this one we're having a bit of a tricky time with and we're super excited to get to work with the teachers with, is cultural representation and/or awareness.
Morro Bay High has the stigma of being laid back, which has created a strong base of students who care less about their school and are resistant to showing school pride. We hope to see a new culture through video announcements and verbal reminders, such as teachers talking about school activities, along with video announcements to celebrate student achievement, human interest stories, and also by teaming up with journalism, which is our spyglass kind of newspaper people. We hope to see a new culture by the end of the Measure D construction. With a new campus, we demand a new culture.
After completing these goals, we discussed and created a timeline that it would allow us to share data and SMART goals for our campus with faculty, students, and other groups on campus. So this will be on Wednesday, March 13th during lunch in our lecture demo room. We will share data to the students from our Youth Truth Survey at a lunch conversation, which all of our students at Student Senate will attend to and get feedback from our own students.
And then, like we did last year, on Monday, April 15th, during our TCT Teachers Prep period, we are going to have a staff meeting, data presentation, and discussion. It'll be in the same format as we did last year. So if you guys don't know, what we did is we had a group of like 7 to 8 teachers with mixed departments assigned to one Student Senate student. And we basically had a protocol where we went over the data. We had them analyze it. We gave them time to kind of come to their own conclusions. And then we gave them our SMART goals, which we then took their input for it and we changed them, which is going to be a huge thing for our third SMART goal this year.
So for the last event on our timeline, it's going to be on Monday, April 29th, where Rosalie will be presenting our revised SMART goals to our campus's Student Site Council, which has student, parent, and faculty representations. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Any questions from the board? All right. Thank you for that comprehensive summary.
I'd like to introduce Mr. Calandro from Laguna Middle School.
All right, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to work with our Student Senate. It is the greatest group of kids, and just to get to spend a little time with them, they make me smarter every time I sit down with them, which is a really good thing because they have great ideas. So I'm going to turn it over to Adam, Dawson, and Hajir.
So our first SMART goal is to improve academic rigor and relevance, which is something that kids need, want, and it makes sense for them to learn it, and they understand how it's relevant to them in their lives. We're going to measure that by 2021. Our scores on rigor will improve to a score of at least 3.86 as measured on the Youth Truth Survey. We are meeting with Mr. Scaldi and Mr. Calandro to come up with examples of what students think is working so that they can share those with teachers and build on them and then implement that into the curriculum.
Our second SMART goal is to improve student perception about preparation for high school. And by 2021, our scores on preparation for high school will improve to a score of at least 3.98 as measured by the Youth Truth Survey. And students want to understand the fundamentals of high school. For example, they want to know more about the number of periods, how classes work, what types of classes students should take, opportunities, trimester system, extracurricular activities, AP courses, daily schedule, and how eighth grade classes are preparing them for high school. Counselors will be going into eighth grade classrooms before the end of the school year. Administration will be set up meeting with the high school counselors. However, our goal is already in process. Our counselors and principals met today and are working with the high school counselors to figure out how to best present this.
So our last SMART goal is to reduce the amount of student harassment, bullying, and sensitivity based on insensitivity based on the student race and ethnicity. So measurable in terms of measurability, by 2020, we will want to reduce the number of students who report having been bullied based on race to 5%, gender and sexuality to 5%, and religion to 5%. We know zero is where we're supposed to be and where we should want to be, but we're talking about a survey, and there's something that's bound to go kind of under the radar, so... most of the bullying that we're talking about is verbal. Students are using language to one another that can be offensive and very unkind. Other students, we believe, who do this will say they're just joking, but we need that to stop too because, you know, words hurt. So in terms of being specific, we need to promote the idea that adults are here to help. If you're being bullied, you need to have the... just know that there's someone there to back you up. And so like Eli said, we just need teachers to be very understanding and vocal about how it's all right to report. And you're not going to be a snitch or anything. That's a big problem with reporting, snitching. But it's really not that big of a deal if it's anonymous. So we also need to... the teachers are going to be talking about the issues in class regularly. It's not going to be like a thing on the announcements once in a while. It's going to be like we need to understand and really drive through that this is a problem, but there's definitely like a good outcome that's out there, and we just need to talk about it. We need to promote the cultural awareness through lunch activities and awareness campaigns, and possibly make safe spaces for students who feel that they're not being understood or they're being bullied. So, thank you. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. That's very helpful to us. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce Mr. Dowler from Pacific Beach High School.
All right. I really didn't expect that. So I'm going to introduce Ray King and JT Reynolds, who are really going to do the entire presentation, and they're totally prepared.
Okay, so our first SMART goal is project-based learning, and this was, I believe, a repeat from last year. And since we've had it, it has showed that students were more efficient in completing their work, and they were more willing to get their work done. And since I've been there, we've had about almost every class that I've been in that's been project-based learning. And, for example, we had a economics class, and we had a budget project where we budgeted out how to live if we were just high school graduates with no previous job experience. And our second SMART goal is updated supplies. And recently we have just received new Chromebooks for enough for every student in the school. So we do not need those anymore. But our textbooks are still pretty out of date. But that is pretty all around in the district right now.
Hello, I'm Ray King. For our third SMART goal, I wanted to talk about our incentives. We have had a little bit of a trouble with attendance because of our unique schedules. It can be hard for some students to come on time or want to come on time, so we positively try to make students want to come with attendance drawings. If you show up on time, you will get a ticket to be put into a raffle where you can win just small gift cards every 2 weeks. We also have honor roll and principal's honor roll where if you get principal's honor roll, you get a sweatshirt and a free meal provided by Mr. Dollard. As well as if you are in honor roll, you get a free meal as well. And we've been trying to get it to the point where if you get honor roll more than once, then you can also get a free sweatshirt. And we are trying to get more opportunities for students to be able to buy things like new shirts and wristbands and water bottles to also kind of add an idea of school spirit. Our fourth goal is the idea of field trips, since we don't go on them very often.
So we've been trying to find a way to make an integrated subject for trips, finding a way to involve project-based learning and for our kinesthetic learners how to to get our hands on to more types of ways to learn. We've also thought of like beach trips, college trips, trips to museums, and the like. And for our fifth goal, we've thought of supplementary classes. We already have farm and sewing, which have been also project-based for farm. We connect our farm class with another farm class since it's two periods long. Like, for example, this quarter, we have been adding in farm work with... Sorry, I can't remember the word. Economics?
Yeah.
Economics. But what we want to do is start getting in classes so our students can apply it to their real life, like cooking classes and other such things. We've also have been wanting to add in art and music classes for the students who don't get to have those anymore since switching to our school, since we have many artists in our school. And that is it. Thank you. Is there any questions?
Ms. Frank.
Yes, I was going to ask about the attendance. Is there kind of a general issue with attendance, regarding transportation? Do students have access to buses, or is that kind of a roadblock for some students?
Our school actually gives out free public bus passes to any student who needs it every month. Uh-huh. Of course, there is... if you do happen to lose yours before the month is up, of course, it does get to a bit of a problem. But from what I've heard, it's never been too big of a deal. There isn't too much of a problem of students getting to school. It's just the fact of wanting to get to school.
Oh. I was going to ask because I know that in town there's a kind of a different bus schedule versus on the coast that can make it more difficult for students on the coast to get using public transportation. So I didn't know if there was a difference between students on the coast being able to, make it. Do they have a higher incidence of absence, versus in town?
From my own personal experience, actually, the public bus system, it never really stops on time, and if it does arrive at the stops early, before the students can get there, they never wait. They will go on, and then it will lead to students being up to an hour or more late, which has been a problem, at least for me, and I've heard from a couple of other students that it has been a difficulty.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thanks for the information.
Thank you, Ray.
If you ever get a chance, Ray King over here is an amazing artist. Our final school is San Luis Obispo High School, so I'd like to introduce Ms. Miller, who's been working tremendously with a very large group of kids.
Good evening. So I have Jordan here with us. He's one of our senior student senate members. And he's just going to go through an overview as Morro Bay High School is sharing. Our goals are very long. So those are included in our presentation if you'd like to see them later. Thank you. But Jordan's just going to quickly go through some of our ideas.
As you said, I'm Jordan. If we can go to the next slide. We have three goals, just like most of the other schools. Our first goal is, like all the other high school said, it's college and career readiness. We did not change in regards to increasing or decreasing on the Youth Juice survey from last year. So we want to improve it this year, going into next year when we take another Youth Juice survey. The main thing we want to do with it is actually, I'll talk about that later. Our second goal is academic engagement and relevance. We want to add relevant current events into the curriculum and make sure that relevant classwork and homework is being is made a priority in all classes. And our third SMART goal is social awareness and equity. We want to create a stronger community on campus with the addition of educational opportunities where students and staff can engage in civil discourse around social awareness and equity. Okay, so this is just a quick overview we can use. The major things we want to do regarding college and career readiness are shorter term things, and overall this goal is the one we can do the quickest out of all three of them. We want to start doing text messages, text message reminders to students, especially seniors and juniors, to remind them when we have such things as workshops. Do you want to say something?
No.
Okay, it seems like you did. Yeah, and we want to add more workshop opportunities during lunch and after and before school. We do have quite a few resources currently at school. The main problem with it all is that students don't know what's happening. There was one workshop we had that the counselors did that was before school on our Late Start Mondays that around 5 or 6 students went to each time, and we had 3 of them, I believe. So stuff like that is a really great resource that isn't being utilized fully, and we want to make sure that happens more. Alongside that, we want to potentially get a college counselor that focuses only on college stuff. Currently, I believe the counselor that you should, or the counselor that knows the most about colleges is Shelley Benson. She is quite good in that, and she helps out quite a bit, but she is a regular counselor, and she has other stuff to do besides that, so it can be difficult to her. And our career department, our career center only has one member, and this makes it difficult because she's working by herself, and sometimes she has other stuff to do, but a student might want to ask her something, and she might not be there during lunch or sometime where she should otherwise be or normally be available. So we want to potentially hire an assistant or some such. Then our next goal, we can skip over that, academic engagement. We want to start bringing more real-life and relevant content into our classes, especially classes where it hasn't been so in the past, such as biology or some such, especially in math. Math is commonly a class where you just do math and then you leave and that's it. But if we could, we'd love to talk to our math teachers and start bringing engaging events and work into the classes that would make students want to work more or at least engage them in some way. We also really want to allow students to take ownership over the coursework and just their learning in general. But to do this, obviously, we'd have to expect a lot more maturity out of all students, because otherwise you can't really have that happening. And then our third SMART goal, social awareness and equity. We had a very interesting discussion recently with some students that weren't in Student Senate but came to one of our meetings, and it was about equity and how stuff was working on campus. And one of our one of the people had recently moved from, I believe it was Michigan, and he was going to a high school there where they don't have any real problems regarding slurs, derogatory language, anything such as that, like anything that would be considered, bad. And it's because they have a much stricter policy towards inappropriate behavior. And we think using a stricter policy in our own schools would be beneficial, because currently if you said something out of turn or out of line, you would barely even get a slap on the wrist for it. Like, your teacher would tell you, just be quiet. But we can't have that happen, because that does not form better behavior in our students. We also want to add more equity-based conversations into our health class, because currently our health class is obviously about just normal health stuff, with some stuff about mental illnesses and such, but we want to add more about, you know, stuff like cultural appropriation, what's okay and what's not okay, and all that kind of stuff. Because in a predominantly white area, sometimes it's easy for people to forget what's okay and what's not okay. I believe that would be it. Yeah, I think that's it. Do you have any questions?
Again, thank you so much.
This is
really useful in guiding us. Dr. Prater, would it be possible for us to receive copies of these either as handouts in Friday notes or emailed to us, the presentations?
Yeah, I will include their draft goals that you saw here tonight in Friday notes this week.
That would be great.
Just keep in mind, they're draft. They're still a feedback loop that hasn't been seen yet, but you'll get the gist. So yeah. I'll make sure you have that this week.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether I'll be able to read my own notes when I leave here this evening, okay. So that would be great to have. All right. Thank you. We are moving on with the agenda to 5.04, Measure D, Citizens Bond Oversight Committee Report. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so Ken Tamfilippo is here tonight, our chairperson for our Citizens Bond Oversight Committee, as the board knows. We have a group of citizens that oversees all of the expenditures, the revenues that come in for the school district, all the projects. So on a quarterly basis, we meet with this group, we review all of the information, we take them on tours of the facilities, and so Mr. Tamfilippo is going to come up and give his report for the, again, these are all the items that were done during the 17-18 school year.
Good evening. How are you? As I was indicating to you, I'm the chairman of the committee, and the committee members are as such. I do want to recognize them because this has been a really strong committee. They've participated in all the meetings, and on the committee we have two educators. I'm one of them. But once again, Ken Sanfilippo is my name. We got Chris Delaney, Jolie Dittmore, Christopher Lopez, Kevin Partisic, Jeannie Potter, and Dr. Jim Stanfill. All excellent folks put the heart in this. as you know, based on, I'm not going to read my report because you have a copy of it, but based on the Citizens Oversight Committee is really to review the financial expenditures of Measure D proceeds and review all the actions related to the compliance of Ed Code, which is the most important, 15278, and to ensure to the public that fiduciary is correct and that the money is being spent where it should be allocated and so on. So I'm very appreciative to the members that work with us, that belong with the district, and by us with the appropriate reports that we need to summarize. We get to see all these activities by vendor, by month, by the amounts, and so on, very well organized, very well articulated to give us the information that we need to do a review on the reports and so on. So we basically are up to date as of June 30th, 2018. We meet on a quarterly basis. And so we see these reports on a quarterly basis and so on, but we're reporting as of June 30th, 2018. As you know, there was $100 million worth of Measure D bonds, Series A and B, $100 million that was released, and those proceeds is kind of what we were tracking on several projects throughout the district. And it's fun to see what, you know, you all been working on for a year and or a few years anyway, the ground floor, and it's fun for us to see some of this, actually seeing the buildings go up. And we just recently toured the new CTE facilities out at Morro Bay, all full of nice new equipment that other districts would just envy to have. And I'm sure we're going to do great things with those facilities and great opportunities for our students. So basically, we looked at a number of projects that were spent on the list of schools that you see there. course, the majority of money was the big projects were at the high schools. There is one correction, and I know about this. Pacific Beach is not an elementary school. Strike out that work. If anybody should know that, it should be me. Pacific Beach High School. But the majority of the money, as you know, are spent at the high schools. But we also had projects going on at the various elementary schools, the refresher schools there, too. We do, just for the public to know, we do follow the Brown Act. We have public meetings, the Public Meeting Act. We have formally scheduled meetings. Let me tell you, when you have accountants on your meeting, there's no date, no room to fudge. Like, can we meet a different day? No. So we have our agendas posted. Information is open to the public for public input if they want to come. So we try to be as transparent as we can because we also have a website that's monitored by the district, putting information on there. And once again, like I said, I really want to thank the committee members and thank the members of the district folks that work with us and answer our questions and provide us information that we need. So that's my annual report, and it's an honor to serve on the committee. So thank you.
Thank you, Ken, and thank you for the service. You've been involved in an important contributor to our district as an educator and now doing this for many years, and we really appreciate it.
Well, 30 was spent with San Luis Coast, so I'm still here. So anyway, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Please express our gratitude to the committee as a whole. All right. On item 6.01, correspondence, at the time that the agenda came out, there had been no official correspondence received. Moving on to public comment, this is the time for anyone from the public who may wish to address the board about an item not listed on the agenda. We have no Mr. Quisenberry. I hadn't seen you back there.
I'm apologize. I came in just a little bit late. And I'm Jim Quisenberry, former board member, former teacher. Currently, I'm working with the NAACP or the NAACP on their education committee. And tonight, we thought was a perfect night to come. Well, it's me right now. But anyway, the NAACP has got an abiding interest in equity, of course, and especially how it can promote student success. Key areas of concern are equal access to college and career counseling, providing educational opportunities for parents, and encouraging greater parent participation in especially the four-year plans. And I see that we're looking at the middle school, which is great. At any rate, at least getting the groundwork in, and so the students, when they come to the high school, understand the importance of developing a four-year plan that will lead to some eventual success in terms of whether they are going to do a dual path, college and career, whether they're going to focus on their career or just their post-secondary education. And the other item that has been brought up is the making sure that parents are informed about the Every Student Succeeds Act and its and how that's being applied, especially how any federal funds are being spent. I know this stuff. Anybody that sits on the board for a while knows that we were very carefully document how money is spent, but sometimes the general public doesn't quite grasp that. So anyway, I'm here just on their behalf to learn something, which I thought that the student presentations were wonderful, very informative, and thank you, folks.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Seeing no one else at this time who wishes to address the board, we will move on to our superintendent's updates. And first we have the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just to update the board a little bit, we at the last Measure D study session, we talked about the surplus sites and the costs of utilities and those types of things and rental income versus the actual cost and what we're doing in terms of those contracts. So Dr. Prater and I have been meeting with Ty Green to also kind of bring the board up to date with what are the possibilities in terms of utilizing our surplus sites, what do we need to do, can't do, those types of things. And he will be coming to our next Measure D study session to update the board on kind of all of that aspect of them, as well as I will be presenting kind of the long-term maintenance look. So not only what's the annual kind of cost for the sites and what we make, but also what do we expect will be kind of the, you know, the long-term maintenance cost, I would say, over the next 15 to 20 years for each one of those as well. So I think it's all important information for the board in terms of looking at as we move forward. I'm also going to be attending the Safe and Sound Schools Conference in Houston coming up. And so in talking with Dr. Prater, you know, safety, of course, is one of our highest priorities. And so this organization seems like it's probably the best one to kind of tie into, dig in, and kind of see what's out there. So they have these five pillars to look at everything from mental health to the actual physical plant itself and our safety plans and officers and tying it all together. So I think Chris will be a good addition with me so that we can kind of hopefully tackle this and put together kind of, what are the best practices, where are we currently at as a district, and where do we need to go. So, and then we'll be reporting that back to the board, hopefully in time for you for your board study kind of planning session for next year.
Great. Thank you. Next is our educational services update. Ms. McGrath.
Great. I have a few things to report. Ryan and I have been going around to sites gathering input, doing our LCAP presentations, and through other sources as well. We're starting to really get some great input from our stakeholders. So it's kind of LCAP heavy season, and so we're starting to dive into that and formulate what that will look like for next year. The foundation, just a quick update there, they have formed their first task force, and that's looking at learning grants, and they're starting to make some great progress. It looks like it could be some really innovative. I think the first ones they may put out there could be some kind of big dollar opportunities for people to really dream big. So I think that's an amazing opportunity. Often we're staying within tight budget lines, so to be able to have an opportunity to really be creative and to dream big could be a great opportunity for our employees. And I'm always inspired by volunteers that are giving their time to be dedicated to doing great things for our kids and our schools. Finally, also just, I know a few of you were there, but had a really successful DLAC. Congratulations to Mr. Mayfield as well as Don Addis and others that dove in to help organize that. But probably over 200 participants in our district English Language Advisory Committee had three presentations there, one on social emotional learning, a presentation from Cuesta, as well as a way for parents to be involved and kind of emphasizing parent engagement. So great things happening. Thanks.
Thank you. It's a very dramatic board meeting tonight, hearing that thunder and flickering lights. And it's
big storm
unusual
going
for
on.
This
big storm.
Part of the world.
It's not right. Good for pool construction, I'll tell you that.
How's that pool at San Luis?
It's full.
Ryan?
It's full of water. Be nice to get the concrete in first.
It's a self-filling pool, I understand. So moving on to our Measure D update.
Yeah, speaking of Measure D, so of course the rain, it's really interesting, kind of twofold, right? On the coast, it's really not stopping our project there that's going on right now because of the sandy soil. So, but here in town, in particular, with the Student Services Building and new theater, and with the pool construction, we're going to have to wait for it to dry up. So, yeah. So, but fortunately, all of that, we did have a big highlight today. Students got to walk into a new math building, again, with new restrooms, new furniture, new technology. So all of those things, which was really nice. And it's just nice to finally, for kids that have been living through this for a couple of years now to actually, be able to enjoy some of the fruits of Measure D. So we got a couple nice emails today from individuals at school, which was really nice. There are still tweaks. It's just like moving into a new house. There's things that, man, I wish that would have been there instead of here, those types of things. And so we'll take care of those. So everyone, deep breath as we kind of move in, right? And so I've asked Jessica Miller actually to help me and, kind of putting a list together of, hey, we need these things in the next week. right? Make sure my printer's hooked up, that I can get on, you know, those types of things. And the next month, you know, as you walk around, they all need a teacher stool for their new teacher station. But, you know, just things like that that you see that you didn't necessarily visualize. We need blinds for the interior windows. So just lockdown drills, those types of things. So we're going to order those. Perfect. And then also kind of just long term. Are there things that you, that the way the classroom's set up, or things that maybe over the course of the summer we can make some changes? Because we want these to be super functional, you know, educational centers, right, for our teachers and for our kids. And but a lot of positive things. So Dr. Prater got to go down with me today and walk around. And just it's really nice for kids, right? In the end of the day, it's just great for kids. So it was really nice.
That's what it's all about. All right. Thank you. All right, we will now move into the discussion action section of the agenda, and 8.01 is the California College Guidance Initiative. Mrs. Frost.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me here tonight. It's so poignant that tonight one of our high schools lists a goal of college and career readiness, and that a former school board member comes up and talks about four-year plans and college and career focus, because I'm here to talk to you about just that. I want to talk to you about a college and career focus that we have at our secondary schools. And when I say our secondary schools, I'm talking about middle school all the way through high school. Your counselors, and especially your secondary counselors, your high school counselors, will tell you that they do have a college and career focus, that they work with their students on this. We've had a platform that I'll tell you about in just a minute, but we've moved to a new one. And we think that this new platform is currently making a difference and will continue to. We are getting teachers involved in this. We think our students are going to value more from this. And that new platform, hopefully I can do this. Nope. Is California Colleges. So you guys have heard it called CCGI, but we're shortening it to California Colleges. And it's a platform through the CDE. And it is an interactive web-based platform with an embedded curriculum. So curriculum for our middle school counselors and our high school counselors and teachers to implement with their students. It helps students create and launch a post-high school plan. It informs parents and students about progress on A through G requirements, which is so important, grades and applications, and I think you're really going to be impressed with that piece of the platform. It also enables our counselors and administrators to review college and career interests. So we can search college interests by students. We can search interest surveys by students. We can search majors by students. So a lot of possibilities on this website. You may remember that we used to be with Naviance. That's something that you saw coming through maybe some of your purchase orders. We talked about it in our college, in our counseling programs. But we moved to CCGI for a number of reasons. First of all, in CCGI or California Colleges, the information is updated biweekly. So the students take a new class and the secretary puts it in. 2 weeks later, it shows up on California Colleges with the grade and the effects on the GPA. So it's immediate input of information. We can track our A through G progress. Our kids can see their high school GPA, their GPA based on UC requirements, and their GPA based on state requirements, Cal State. They can directly apply to Cal State universities, and they can directly apply to community colleges and FAFSA through this platform where they're storing everything else as well. And then they can also do interest inventories based off of the Myers-Briggs survey. We're going to have a couple of counselors who know this program come up in just a minute or so to tell you more about this. They see this Myers-Briggs survey is as very important as we're talking about equity. Some of our families will do this privately, and it's very expensive in our community. We can now provide that to all students, regardless of their income. For our students, they can explore potential careers, they can search for colleges, they can create a college financing plan, they can log their community service, their work, and their extracurricular experiences, all things that colleges want to see, and they can launch and track those applications that I talked about. I'd like to invite two counselors up here, one from SLO High School, Carrie English, and one from Morro Bay High School, Elena Smith, and they're going to show you some details of the platform and actually take you into a sample student so that you can see what it looks like when a student accesses the website. Got it. And I think it's this lower mirror. We'll get you there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Carrie Ingalls. I'm from San Luis Obispo High School, one of the counselors there, and love to introduce this platform to you and be able to answer all of the questions and how we present this to all of our students. So the curriculum for our kids, when they log in, they just log in using their school Gmail account. And so that's nice. We know every single student has one of those on our campus. And they can launch it through our San Luis Obispo High School website. That's where they get to this program, the California Colleges program. They, based on their grade level, when they log in using their Gmail accounts, they're going to have bubbles on their screen. And it's different per grade level. And so this is just a sample 11th grader, and the kids can navigate and hover over the bubbles and go into certain areas there based on what they have there, based on the lessons. So the career assessment is something that we love. There are four different assessments for the students, and we counselors go into the English classrooms every trimester. And we have both a fall presentation for all of the students, and we followed up in a spring presentation. So in the fall, we are working with the English teachers, and we're having the students go through the interest profilers for ninth graders. 10th grade is the multiple intelligences, and so on and so forth. So we work through each of these assessments with the kids, and at the end of the lesson, we are having them save their favorites, their favorite their careers come up. So after they complete these surveys, it's going to list a whole bunch of possible careers for them, and then we ask them to go in and save some of those to their platform. There's also a college tab for students. We call the California Colleges a one-stop shop because it has college information, it has career information, it has financial aid information for free for every student to access at any time. It's fantastic. So we're very, very grateful that our school district provided this opportunity for our students. The college search is really fun. They can just log in and toggle over that and search for colleges. They can search nationwide. They can search specifically. They can type in Boston University if they want, and that information comes up about that college. They can put in their parameters. I want to live in California by the beach, and I want there to be a big football team. They can put in their favorite parameters, and then it will give them a list of the colleges that meet their needs. So we love that. We love doing that. We do that one with the juniors. It's a lot of fun. The major search tool, if you know that you want to be a nurse, for example, you can just type in nursing, and it will list all of the colleges that have that major. So then they can save those colleges to their platform and have a list of colleges that they can apply to when they're seniors. So the academic planner is what we do with our students in the spring, where the counselors go back into the second semester, if you will, the B trimesters of English. And that's where we're doing the four-year planning with every student. We have hard copies of four-year plans that we work with the students, and then we also show them how to use California Colleges as a tool. It is a tool for them to use. And so they can access their academic planner, and then they can go in and add electronically the courses that they want to take at SLO High, Morro Bay High School. And we'll show you how to do that. We're going to get in and show you a partner school in just a second, or a partner student, rather. On the right-hand side,
we'll just toggle over that, and you guys can kind of just look at it, and it gives them where they stand with their CSU eligibility, if they're meeting their goals to meet their A through G requirements. And so it does a four-year plan for just all 4 years of high school, and then it will narrow its focus to just the A through G requirements for those students that are interested in making sure they're meeting those entrance requirements. So let's go to the partner example at ccgi.edu. This is a this is what the students and the families see, the kids, the home page, and they'll go in and they'll log into that little clock, that little lock, rather. We're using a dummy student here. Thank you. So there, up at the top, there are four tabs: the My Plan, College tab, Career tab, and Financial Aid tab. The My Plan tab is where the students can go in and do their academic planning, that four-year planning that we were talking about. And all of that other stuff is just really just the one-stop shop. So their careers, their colleges, they can upload letters of recommendations, they can fill out resumes, and they just have a one-stop shop for everything for them to use. Before we do that, let's go over to the college. If you can go to the college tab again, there's the college search tools. We want our students to launch every single application from this platform. And all of the applications are listed, the Cal States, the UCs, the Common App, and the community colleges as well. The beautiful thing about this platform is that all of the information from PowerSchool migrates into the college applications. So if they earned, all of their grades just goes right into the Cal State application, which is awesome because it takes away all of the error for them, and it's really just a wonderful gift for our students. But we want them to launch all of their applications here, so they don't have to know the websites for the UCs, their Common App, or the Cal States. They can just go to our website and launch from this spot. So it's pretty terrific. There's all kinds of information. What do you do if you're put on the wait list, so on and so forth. So it's just a huge resource. So we sort of went over the career tab a little bit. That's where they do their profiles. And those are the lessons that we teach the kids when we go into the English classes with the English teachers. Then the financial aid tab is pretty terrific also. It's a hyperlink to the FAFSA, the Federal Financial Forms for students, the CSS profile, the Cal Grant information, just all of the information that students and families will need to know for how to pay for college. We love this. We love this page. It's very, very text heavy, but it's just a lot of good information for our families.
So does that have the action? You can upload your FAFSA information onto there?
So
or is it just
it goes to the FAFSA. It hyperlinks to the application. Again, it's that one-stop shop, right. So you don't need to know that website. You can just launch it right from here. So it's pretty terrific, right? Yeah. All right, so let's go back to My Plan real quick. Thanks, Luana. And the academic planner, you can go ahead and hit that. And then if you scroll down, you can start to see the academic planner. There's this fake student, the dummy student's GPA. That's the high school GPA for all the courses that the student has taken at San Luis Obispo High School, including the sports and physical education and all of those things that would be calculated for the full 4 years. Then, and if you keep scrolling down, there's all the classes that they have taken. Ninth grade, there's no history, social science. That starts in 10th grade. There's the grades that they earned. This is terrific, too. We always tell our students to look at this for those car insurance, you know, if you want to get a discount because you're a good student and you don't need to come and pick up a transcript. It's right here. You have access to your GPA and all of the grades that you've earned at San Luis Obispo and Morro Bay High School. So that's pretty terrific. And this is where we do our planning as well. So when we're meeting with the 10th graders, we're teaching them how to go into this platform and add their 11th grade classes. And again, it's just a tool. They can go in and change their mind. They can go in whenever they want to look at this. So, all right, going back up to the top of this page, we have the CSU eligibility tab. This is for students that are looking at just the A through G requirements. So it's pretty terrific. You'll see that sometimes the CSU GPA is different from the high school GPA, because now we're only looking at A through G courses only. No PE, none of those courses that aren't college prep courses. So it's just calculating the A through G for the students. And you can see on the right, this particular student is meeting the red, it says based on successful completion, you appear to not be making progress towards this. So there's a big red, you're not making progress, why not? So when you start to scroll down, we'll see all the A through G courses. You can keep going. So this student has a green check because they earned C's or better in their A through G coursework, and therefore they get a nice little green check mark. So this student has completed his 2 years of history and social science, and continuing to go down all of the different A through G categories. And why this kid wasn't on track, I'm not sure. It's a dummy student. So if it was a real San Luis High School student.
Maybe it's because he hasn't finished yet.
He hasn't finished yet? Yeah, well, maybe he hasn't.
It is.
Okay. He hasn't finished yet.
Because he's not a real student.
Right. All right. So is there another slide after that? Or that's just the that's just the platform and what it looks like, and I just want to reassure you guys that we are meeting with every student. We go into the special ed classes, we go to the EL classes, we go into every English class, and we do 2 presentations every year, 1 in the fall, 1 in the spring. Questions about that platform at all?
Just wish it had been around when I was doing that.
Yeah, people pay a lot of money for this stuff out there, and it's just right here for everyone. We also give presentations for parent nights every night as well, or not every night, rather every year. And so grade level parent nights where we present all of this information and parents can log in as well because there is a parent login. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, thank you.
Was there another slide?
I think you kind of went over it. It's the financial
aid. Oh, I already went over that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Can I ask some questions?
Yeah, please.
I'm not sure it's you or Diane or.
Okay.
So this is my understanding. There are some of us who are pretty savvy about getting into college, and we know the tricks, and we know what needs to be done. This is obviously a great help, but what's driving the students to this? So if we have an SED student, what's driving them to go to this, and is there help for them? Because even as wonderful as this is, you still need to know that you need a FAFSA if you need money.
Yeah, so that's a great question, and I feel like when we do our classroom presentations, there are 4 counselors now at our site, so we're very grateful for that. Thank you very much. And I'll just speak for myself. So I'm in charge of the 10th graders this year, and so I go to every single 10th grade class, and of course, we know that there are EL students, there are SED students, all of the students get the presentation. And we really carve out the whole period of time for those kids to be able to answer questions for them. And again, this is just a tool. We go over a hard copy with them as well. And then we certainly invite them to come back to have those personal conversations with us, which is terrific. Because we can log in and see what they've completed, and we can say, hey, looks like you've done this interest profiler, and it looks like you've logged 3 jobs that you're really interested in, and what is it going to take to get to that job? So we can actually sit down and have those conversations with the kids. We invite them. We invite the parents. We put all of the information out there, and I feel really good about them coming and talking to us if they have extra specific questions. But I can tell you, I walk up and down every single aisle, and I am asking the kids, do you have any questions about this, and what classes are you going to do, and what are you interested in? So, and I have to say also, we are very mindful of who the SED students are, and we try to give a little extra love there.
Thank you very much. So ultimately, this will be in Spanish as well for the parents logging in?
I do think
they're working.
I think that the California colleges, that's on their side, and they are working on that.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
And then my daughter has her paralegal certificate, and this seems to be very geared towards degrees. I noticed the word community college did come up, so if you put in something that's a certificate, certificate rather than a degree? Is this?
Yeah, once they search and they go through their strengths and those profiles, those it'll come up with the careers. And when you start to drill into the program a little bit more and you want to become a paralegal, it will give you the outlook of what the career is, how much money you make, what the education is that you require, and so on and so forth. And so as you continue to drill into it, you just need to take the time to do that, and it will give you that information.
So, for example, if you're going to do a certificate program like pharmacy tech, does it take you to a community college that offers that?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Great program.
Ms. Frank.
Thanks. Yes, thank you. This looks like a. Thank you for asking the bilingual question. The other thing I wanted to ask is, are you doing presentations at the site ELAC meetings? For those as a way to connect the parents with the students with this process? That's one question. The other question would be, is this more of a self-directed program? And the reason why I'm asking that, it's sort of what Mark is saying and what you're talking about. You're very mindful of, you know, the at-risk students.
Yes.
But is there kind of a systematic way that you can be, you know, can you access any kid's profile? And then is there a way that certain markers come up that you flag so you're initiating that contact with that student? Because sometimes those students are the least likely to come up and initiate that with you.
Yeah, you can do that. Do you want to answer that? There were a lot of questions there,
sure.
So one
you.
At a time. So as far as the ELAC, I think Shelley Benson goes to those meetings, but has she given a presentation about this specifically for them? Not to my knowledge. We do give this presentation to our families, our grade level meetings that we have, and we have translators there. And we certainly stop and ask and answer questions for all of the families, all of the parents that are, and it's standing room only. But yes, we have the information for them. And again, we invite them to come and talk to us. So I hope so. Yeah. And I do presentations in, I do presentations in the EL classrooms as well. Sorry.
And at Laguna Middle School, I'm sorry, I'm Mary Sanchez-Alwine, I'm the counselor at Laguna. I have presented these California Colleges platform to all of our ELAC parents, and I've done it last year and this year, and then we'll do it again. Every time we present in the classrooms, we like to share what's been presented, and so I always share that at the ELAC meetings as well.
That's great. I guess what I would hope for that we as a district do is that we're doing that at all sites, that, you know, the ELAC presenting, because it's a smaller, more intimate kind of setting. And then what would be that process that that flags are coming up on your screen for you to reach out to the students, even though you're meeting with every student and, you know, but they tend to have a tendency not to be the ones to initiate. So I don't know what that looks like or if that. Yeah. But thank you. This looks great.
I'm going to add one other layer, too. Our teachers are involved in the lessons as well, so they're not getting the information also from the counselors, but right. In addition with the teachers doing certain lessons. So they're continually, hopefully with this new platform, hearing California Colleges and Career mm-hmm. and knowing what it has to offer. So it becomes a buzzword on campus that everyone's familiar with, too. So it's counselors, administrators, and our teachers on board. So.
And starting in middle school, that's the reason why we're starting it there, is to continue that conversation, 7th, 8th grade, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Hi. Okay, still works. That must be the lightning. So that makes me think, is there, and this may be too much of an invasion of privacy, can you actually see maybe just the number of students that are taking advantage of the program?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
They can go into a report section. So I have access to the entire district. They have access to every student at their school. And they can query like you can in other, you know, databases like right. this. You'll see at the end when I talk about next steps, so this kind of goes with that. You'll see at the end that there are some things that California Colleges is still working on. This is a new platform, and frankly, San Luis Coastal is kind of leading the effort. We're one of their districts who has really kind of grabbed onto this for their kids. But there are certain things that they can't do yet. And one of the things that we can't do is search by EL student
or search all SED kids. So we can search, but we're still a little bit limited. But based on how responsive they've been, I'm certain that that's coming, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Anything else? Mrs. Roger.
Thank you.
Am I buzzing? I'm wondering, I know that, you know, people have limited time and use another one? Okay, can you hear me now? I know that the time is limited and that you can't get everything that you want to get done in the time that you have, but I'm wondering if there is some way to access the information about students who have not attempted to engage with this platform and to individually meet with those students and actually talk them through the process so that they can get on. Because I think some kids perhaps are just, the whole thing is overwhelming and frightening, and they just think, nah, I'm not going to go there. And I know you can't get to every parent. It would be great if you could. But is there a way to get to every student, either through the counselors, through the advisory period instructors, or some way?
I believe we are.
Yeah, we are doing that.
Because are you? We are hitting every single classroom in the English classroom.
Correct.
So all ninth grade have a ninth grade lesson where we go through the profiles. And if they're absent that day, for example, then we can go back and look, or the teacher will say, hey, make sure you call in so-and-so. They were absent today. And we'll follow up with that for sure. But we are reaching every kid. We are doing these presentations, and we are going in, and we're having them log in, and we're having them complete the profile, and we're having them say things to their platforms. So I feel very confident that
everybody's on.
Even new students. You know, new students will come in, and within, I'd say, a week, they're in our system, and we can see, oh, this student hasn't logged in yet because they're new, they've just enrolled. We need to call in that student and
share
this information.
That's great that all the kids are on. Now we need to figure out how to make sure that, you know, not every child has the parental support that we would like to see, and so that is, we're reaching out to parents as much as possible through whatever avenues that we have. Thank you very much for your work.
Mr. Buckman.
Just one more thing. So I'm really excited. It's getting really excited. So really exciting. So we also have this huge potential for the trades out there. And is this, I mean, could you carry this message to them if they're not already?
So
I mean, we got apprenticeships out there. And
absolutely. So part of the presentations that we go into in the fall, we're introducing this as a tool, but we're giving them hard copy four-year plans. We're giving them hard copies of all of the courses that we teach at Slo High that fall under the umbrella for every pathway. We're encouraging the kids to sign up for those. And when they have the hard copy right in front of them, they can do it online, but we also want them to have that hard copy still so that you can see, hey, I've got two spaces left. What am I going to choose? Well, I really like this computer pathway. And so I know I have two spaces left in my junior year where I can sign up for that class. So we have all of these handouts that we're giving the students and presenting to them. So, yeah, absolutely. We love our elective program, and it's a really, really big conversation that we have all the time. I would assume you too at Morro Bay.
You know, CTE pathways, that being connected as well.
So there may be an answer here. So there are trade schools out there.
Yeah.
And so
you can search trade schools in here.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. They're all in there.
Yep. All in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Ready?
Anything else? As you can see,
we've got a couple more.
Yeah,
very
blind.
You should just go.
I know. Not very much more. So they'll be here, and they'll come up to the microphone if you want more about this. But I also want you to know that a college and career focus is not just at our high schools. We are starting at our middle schools. You saw Mrs. Sanchez-Alwin. She's working with every student there. And the campuses themselves are trying to build this college and career focus. I asked Mr. Bloom to come up and talk a little bit about what Los Osos Middle School is doing, which is really impressive.
So we have
jumped on board with this because we think this is super important also. And actually, at Los Osos, we're really trying to start the conversation with kids around college and career because, you know, we've had our STEAM program going and there's lots of very applicable career type things, and now with the amazing things that have happened at Morro Bay with their L building and all of the work prepared courses that they have, their video editing, their milling, their printing, I mean, it's just amazing. So we've started the talk with our students, and whoops, wrong direction. And so one of the big picture for us is we want our kids to start having the conversation around college and career. We want all students to understand the pathways and the options before they're at Morro Bay, and then also to think about, hey, college, am I looking at Cuesta Promise? Am I going straight to a four-year? Do I want to go into a career? That's the big picture we're trying to share. And so in sixth grade, we, as you can see from our student goals, they want to see more things that are related to careers. So we're asking teachers to build that into what they do on a daily basis. Seventh grade, our students, as you heard, same as Laguna, are accessing CCGI, and our counselor, Ms. Baca, goes out to all seventh grade classes twice, and they go through a couple of the CCGI lessons. We're going to focus next year in our advisory is having one day of advisory is going to be college and career theme to try to address it more in a kind of whole school method. So that's a piece of it also. And then in eighth grade, our students, again, Ms. Baca goes out and hits the eighth grade class, all students, and hits two other lessons as they're moving up in their understanding of what CCGI is and how it works. And part of it is their interest profiler, which is prior to what they're going to do when they're in high school. The other piece that we're doing is we're working on helping them understand what a four-year plan is. So between Mrs. Baca, myself, and Mrs. Dinelli, we are meeting with each and every student individually to talk about what a four-year plan looks like. We have Morro Bay courses. We have the Morro Bay four-year plan, which they talked about as the hard copy they're giving to kids. And our students are walking through that. And they're great conversations because there are students that had no idea he was going into video game design, no idea that this student wanted to go on to college. And then we start also being able to kind of identify students for things that they might want to do in high school, like go into AVID and some of the specific programs. So it's really been like these amazing talks. Plus, we have this kind of other career exploration focus is, like I said, sixth graders do the career talks, but our seventh graders are all taking a field trip. They're going to Cuesta and looking at the certificated programs that they offer there and checking out those departments and seeing what's offered. Our eighth graders this year are going to the Googleplex, all eighth graders on four buses going up for one day to see Google and then go to Stanford. So they're going to get that exposure to that. That was done through a grant that Mr. Wilcox wrote, and so that's this year. I don't know what happens next year, but it'll probably be something cool. So again, we want to make sure they truly understand the college and career ready pathways, and these are the Morro Bay ones, so that's really what we're doing. Although we do have a handful of students that we identify that are talking like, well, we want to go to SLO High, so we'll get that information. We'll pass that information on to the SLO counselors when we run across those students. I think we get about 5 to 10 students that migrate from the coast to SLO for various reasons. So we talk with the kids that virtually every single class at Morro Bay High also meets these college career pathways. So that's something that we share with the students. In addition to all we're doing with the students one-on-one, we send an email to the parents and let them know that, hey, we've just met with your students. This is what we've talked about. We get great responses. Parents are super supportive and love the fact we're starting these conversations in eighth grade one-on-one with the kids. This is an example of the Morro, it's kind of hard to see, but that's the Morro Bay plan that we use to help them build out what they're doing. After they've done this, we're going to be pulling kids in and having them plug in to the best of their knowledge what they might want to do into the CCGI platform. Now,
one of the things that's really challenging, right, it's very simple to look at the freshman and the sophomore schedule for kids going into high school. We have very frank conversations with kids that we don't expect you to understand what elective you might want to take your junior and senior year, and we make it very clear to all of the parents and the students that this is not a contract. This is not your high school contract. This is a roadmap that can change just like you change your destination. So it's super important. That's one of the biggest messages is this is, again, this is beginning the conversation so that when they get to high school, they are super informed about what they may or may want to do. And, you know, I have kids that are not in advanced classes at Loams, but they're getting straight A's, and they're like, yep, I'm taking advanced. I'm going to take AP. I want to take AP. My friends are doing that. That's what I want to do. And I'm like, right on. That's a great goal. And I said, that will, you know, as you go through freshman English, you get A's in that. I'm sure your teacher will probably be saying, like, yeah, go for the next level and keep pushing it. And that's the kind of conversations we're having. Oh. I think it's back to you. Any questions from the middle school perspective? Okay. I was trying to be as eloquent as Eli, but I don't think I quite got there.
Got your work cut out for you there.
You know, he only had like three things on his paper. The whole thing was ad-libbed.
Yeah.
All of it.
He
was like
awesome.
Amazing.
All right, just to close up, I did want to acknowledge that there's some things that we really love about California colleges and some things that we think need to be enhanced. And honestly, like I said before, they are taking our feedback and they send a representative to every one of our secondary counselor meetings. How's it going? What can we do and what's our feedback? So things we love, the biweekly upload, the A to G focus, the GPAs for the kids to see, parent access is huge, the direct applications, interest surveys, and the college and career focus that it's creating in our school. There are a few things that we need them to work on, and we've shared these with them. The whole CTE pathway completion, they know that that's an interest of ours, and they hear it from their other partner districts, that we want kids to know that they're close to CTE pathway completion, just like they know that they're close to A through G completion. The four-year plan, you hear us saying that we're still putting it on paper. It's cumbersome. In California colleges, it is not easy for our students to use, and it takes a lot of time for our counselors to guide them through it. So again, CCGI is working on that. And then finally, if your course is not aligned A through G, you're ending up below the line. Right? So we showed you all the A through G courses, then the other courses below. You know, consider yourself a special education student. Everything's below the line. So that's also something that we've talked to them about. You know, a little bit of equity there as well, a screen that might list by content area, that kind of thing. So all of those things are things that we'd like for them to work on. But honestly, the benefits we see with this far outweigh kind of the hurdles we've seen in the last few months.
Thank you.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this issue? All right. Looks like nothing from the board. So thank you, and thank you for taking the time to come help us understand this. It's very informative. Thank you. All right. Next we have 8.02, counseling support throughout the district. So it's a big night for our counselors and for Mrs. Frost.
It is.
Thank you.
Exactly. All right. Thank you very much. It is a big night for counseling. I think CCGI and our second presentation go hand in hand. And I think it's really, really appropriate for us to look at counseling services that we have in this district to really kind of honor some of the services that we are providing to our students and families and kind of think about where we want to go next. So here we are, counseling, student and family support, and we specifically put family support in there because we really are looking at the whole unit. We want to support the students, but we also want to support the families. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about counseling throughout the district. We're also going to share best practice at the elementary level and an example at the secondary level. And then I'm going to give you a little glimpse of where we're going as a department in terms of counseling in the district. So first of all, I think we can be really proud that we have quite an array of counseling opportunities in our district. We have our PPS counselors. Those are the, you know, full-time counselors or half-time counselors that we have at our schools. We have marriage and family therapists in our district, and you will not see that everywhere. We also have marriage and family therapist interns in our schools. And then finally, the family resource advocates, one in SLO and one on the coast. And you'll see they'll come up and share some data. The effect that they have on some families is just irreplaceable, really. Our focus areas in counseling are social-emotional support, stress and anxiety support, college and career, which you've heard so much about, and then academic supports. Let's see. Okay. This shows you the supports that we have at our elementary schools. So the school down the left with the number of students at that school, your PPS counselor, and at our elementary schools, we have 0.2, which is one day at the smallest of our schools, up to a 0.5, which is basically half a week at the other schools. We do have 0.4s. Those are mostly our non-Title I schools. So our Title I schools basically have a half a week of elementary support. Okay, MFTI, we've listed there the marriage and family therapist interns and the days that they're serving on the campuses. Again, what you will see is our Title I schools have more support than our non-Title I schools. And you'll even see one of our schools, CL Smith, last year they had 2 days. We really saw some needs. We had an opportunity. Mr. Daller worked really closely with the organization providing the MFTI, and he was able to increase that to 3 days a week. And then over there on the right, and with all of our data, I want to caution the board that we pulled this data in February. Right? Things change. We have more contacts with students. More students are, referred for service, that kind of thing. But that will show you at each site how many student contacts the MFTI has. Generally, you'll see if it's a one-day-a-week site, there's 5 contacts. If it's a two-day-a-week site, you have about 10 contacts. Okay? Those are referred by the PPS counselor. So they really take the lead in determining who among their students have the greatest need for MFTI support. Okay. And then looking at the same thing at our secondary sites. So Laguna Middle School with 1.8 PPS, Los Osos with 1.0, and on through to at Morro Bay, and then 4.0 at San Luis High, which we said is a full FTE increase from last year. There's your MFT support, and you'll notice the difference. Our elementary schools have MFT interns. Our secondary schools, for the most part, have full MFTs. 2.5 at Laguna and 2.5 at Los Osos Middle School, which is a smaller school, but Los Osos Middle School has the PEI grant, so they have a little bit more support there than their numbers would normally warrant. 2 days at Morro Bay, 4 days at San Luis High, and then on the far right, you'll see the referrals for the MFTs. And we got a little bit specific if you look at Morro Bay High School and San Luis High. Social and emotional referrals, and then we also have drug and alcohol referrals. Pacific Beach exclusively has an MFT. They do not have a PPS counselor. But I will tell you, Mr. Dowler, who really tries to coordinate the MFTs, is very happy with that system for his students and believes that his MFT brings great value to those students. And you can see 62 students referred and served this year at PB based on their school size is pretty impressive. Okay, let's look at a little bit of data here. So this is for our elementary sites, and I have to say this one more time because I promised the counselors I would. This data is pulled in February. We'll pull it again in June, and I think you're going to see, you know, higher numbers of contact, maybe a little bit different on the percentages. But in terms of our February supports, your first column there lists total individual student contacts. So at Baywood, out of the over 300 students they have, 114 of them have been seen by their counselor. Then we looked at, you know, what are some of the subgroups? And these are subgroups that we've been pulling for years. So you might see something a little bit different than subgroups we have in other board reports. I don't have non-SED for you, but I do have SED. So you look there. I mean, if we take Hawthorne as an example, 125 students, and if we go straight across, let's look at our percentages. 27.2 are EL, 58% are Hispanic, 32 white, 16% special education, and then 71% SED. So we use this as a department and as a counseling team to really look at who we are making contact with. Who are we supporting? Are we supporting those most in need? Do we need to circle back, do a little bit of work in PowerSchool, identify kids we haven't seen yet, and then pull them in? So it's really useful data for us. And then if I go to secondary, here's your secondary hits. So again, the area shows you every student that they've made contact with. And at the secondary levels, it's really impressive. They've seen 50% or more of their kids. And some of these sites have seen more like 70%, 65-70% of their kids, if you really look at the numbers compared to the whole. Again, looking over, I mean, what can we look at? Laguna Middle School, 13% of their ELs, 39% of their Hispanic, 49% white students, 16% SPED, and 36% SED. So again, those counselors look at that data, they look at the needs of their kids, and they pull in students who haven't had contact if they believe that it's necessary. All right, I wanted to bring a counselor up, bring somebody who's working with kids. And at the elementary level, I asked Maribel Chavez to come and join us. Just really briefly tell you about maybe one program among many that she does at the schools that she serves.
Good evening, and thank you for having me here today. As an elementary school counselor, I probably have one of the most rewarding and fun jobs you can have. And tonight I would like to highlight one specific part that I do. Like she said, there's a lot that I do every single day, and no day is the same as, you know, the other. But that first bullet, connecting students in friendship, again, is one of my favorites. There are different ways that I do that. One of them would be like scheduled friendship groups that I do on a weekly basis. But right now my focus that I want to talk to you about is just lunch bunches. And the reason that I chose lunch bunches to talk about is because, again, it is one of the most fun ways to connect students. I strategically invite students to come over and have some lunch with me, and I ask them to either invite someone, or if they're having troubles with making friendships and don't know who to bring, I, again, you know, find someone who I think would be a great match for them. So this, you know, there's no agenda, no lesson plan. It's just I have them over in the playroom or counseling room, and we have great conversations. We talk about anything and everything, and then we have some time to play. Usually they involve me in their play, or it could be arts and crafts, a board game. So lots of fun things that can happen. To invite students, it could be new students to our school. They're usually my priority. I want to make sure that we connect them, not just to me, but to their peers. And I also have students. It's become so popular now that they're asking me all of the time, when can I come and have lunch with you? And there are times when I'm like, is it just the toys? But usually they just want to have someone to have a conversation with. So I just really, really enjoy that part of my job. It's so much fun. I rarely ever have lunch with the adults. they don't usually, you know, see me at lunchtime. But I just want to really make myself available to the students and really spark those friendships that will hopefully for many of them continue on for many years. So that's just a little piece of my job, but it's one of the most rewarding. Thank you.
I think you can also, if you listen to some of the things that our counselors do across the board, and especially our elementary counselors, we're talking about culture of care on campus. Right, we're talking about having contact with those students, an adult making a connection, which might lead to that student wanting to be on that campus and be successful. So I think it's something really important. The next thing is our secondary schools, just a little best practice there. One of the things that we're really proud of at our secondary schools is our connections in the community. Transitions Mental Health partners with us in our schools, County Behavioral Health partners with us, Stand Strong is a group that we work with, and we also work with Mindful Slow. I think some of you are aware of Mindful Slow. I asked them to come here for just a couple of minutes and talk about the Reach Club that they have brought to our secondary schools.
Good evening. We are honored to be here to share work with you. We thank Diane for collaborating with us, and we are grateful to know that many of you were at our DLAC presentation on social-emotional learning, and this is a subset.
Would you give us your names, please?
Yes.
Would you give us your names,
yes,
please?
I'm Anna O'Sullivan, and this is Carrie Mahoney.
Thank you.
Together we have are the creators of Mindful Slow and the Reach Club, the founders of Connect Be Well, and most importantly, we're also parents and have schools, students and children in the district. Our daughters will be seniors this year, or our seniors will be graduating, and I have a freshman son. And we're going to highlight Reach Club, but we would like you to know that, put this in context, Reach Club is part of our approach, a collaborative approach that we're taking, a systems approach. Reach Club was created to fill some student needs at the high school, we have been piloting Reach since the fall of 2016 at Slo High, and as of this year, we are now expanding Reach to Morro Bay High School and to Laguna High School, and we'll be
Laguna Middle School.
Thank you, and we'll be reaching out to Los Osos Middle School in the next month. We write letters to parents that come out in the principal's newsletter weekly. On selected topics and share resources. We've also worked with the counseling staff. Diane has invited us to present and share our work with elementary and secondary counselors. We work with teachers who have reached out to us wanting to know more about social-emotional learning. So Reach Club.
Thank you for having us. I am honored to stand by Anna as we've kind of been piloting some amazing programs. I think her strength and her just her background, but basically her lived experience, I think is a gift to all of us. Reach began pretty much with Shelley Benson and I on February 29th of 2016, the day after Anna and Patrick lost their son, Tomas. We were in the library at Slo High School, and County Behavioral Health was in the library working with a lot of students, but Shelley Benson and I decided to work with a large group of students who were closely associated with the O'Sullivans. And we realized that these students really needed some background on really what was depression, what was anxiety, am I going to suffer from depression and anxiety, or how is it that I can be able to see the signs and what can I do? So Reach began, and it's really our whole focus with many of our programs is preventative. We have amazing resources and professional resources within our community and within our district, but we really felt that with 100% of the population of our students, offering tools, coping tools, offering awareness, and with based on our research, which started through Harvard and Making Caring Common, which was they saw a lot of the first-time freshmen at Harvard were very different than the freshmen they'd seen 10 years previously. So this is how Reach began. We've been piloting it and testing it out, and it's for everyone. It's offering, figuring out how to reach within and reach out. And it's very high-impact solutions. We're really changing the culture. And it kind of goes in parallel with our letters. We believe that the parents need information the way we might see things. But then students need information in the way they can gather and obtain, the way they can feel things. And how is it that just to be able to walk onto campus, how do I handle a B? How do I handle a breakup? How do I learn how to communicate? So we've been doing some really amazing things. Anna and I built a curriculum based on social-emotional learning and the CASEL standards. REACH is inclusive to all students, and it creates an engaged student, and an engaged student is an engaged learner. We've done mix-it-up lunches where everybody on campus from different clubs come together and they sit at a table and they have lunch. Mindfulness-based practices, which I think, the Today Show came and highlighted REACH at Slow High for some of the things, the work they're doing with Gina Beagle. We have professional panels that come and talk about different interests, such as depression and anxiety. We work hand-in-hand with the counseling staff. They are kind of like the mentor advisors along with staff on campus. Kindness cards, which maybe you've heard about. I think it started off with 300 kindness cards, and I think this year they're going to be passing out 1,000. We partner with Cal Poly's Take Five, which is Cal Poly Take Five works with kind of de-stressing the students on campus. So they've been mentoring with us and offering what works for them, and we're doing it on campus. A lot of community outreach. We just believe in relationships. So one of the things, our dream initially was to have kind of like dinner with strangers where everybody kind of had a name tag that says, my name's Carrie and this is what I love to do for students in our community. Well, we're doing that for a parent night, March 20th. We're collaborating with Transitions. We're collaborating with Cal Poly, County Mental Health, and Behavioral Health. And we are having a student panel that we have put together with our high school, Slow High, and with LAMS, where our counselors and us, we've put together a survey, surveyed all 10th and 12th graders. We had 1,600 responses, asking them to give us an idea, what is it that you'd like your parents to understand? And so we're going to have a student panel for the first half. The second half, we're bringing in a professional panel with counselors within the community and counselors within our school, and kind of a resource, or big, huge resource fair that the county behavioral health is going to have there.
And again, we're piloting this with Slow High, Laguna, and Pacific Beach, but our intention is to also do it for the coast schools, and we will be working with the counselors and the admin there to bring the program to them.
Thank you. Okay. I also wanted to highlight our family advocates because they are so effective in our community. Can I invite Mariana Gutierrez and Rocio Hernandez up?
I'm a little bit short.
We're both short.
Hi, I'm Mariana Gutierrez. I'm the bilingual family advocate through CAP Slow that serve all Slow schools.
And hi, I'm Rocio Hernandez, bilingual family advocate through the LINK Resource Center, serving Los Osos and Morro Bay schools.
As family advocates, we're able to provide direct services to our staff and our families by being on a biweekly basis on school sites.
And here we have a breakdown of some of the services we have provided this school year, and we will highlight just a couple of them. So 155 clothing, we have assisted 155 students. And 51 mental health and counseling referrals have been made so far.
In addition to that, we have also done over 181 community agency referrals, as well as 11 rental assistance.
Some additional supports and services that we also do, we coordinate the Coastal Family Resource Center. We coordinate the Coastal Family Resource Fair, and this year it'll take place on April 12th from 4 to 6 p.m. at LOMS, and it is a free event, and all families are welcome.
We also participate in and offer support services during our SARP hearings for our families that share any specific need that may come up during these SARP hearings. We also are standing members of the SLO SAFE team. And now we would like to share two success stories so far this school year. This year, I was able to continue case managing a homeless family of eight. This family has, since day one, which was 2 years ago, has been in homeless situation, so shelter to shelter. And I'm happy to report that after 2 years of case management, they finally moved into their forever home last Friday. And really, this couldn't have been able to be done or possible without the coordination of services and the collaboration between San Luis Coastal staff and community agencies, and of course the family.
And this school year I worked with a family that was about to become homeless, but in collaboration with community agencies we were able to secure housing, and school staff also raised a little bit over $1,600 to assist with rent. And as of today, the family remains housed and the kids are doing well in school. So this is just a little glimpse of some of the support services that we have offered so far to students and families.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Oh, Mrs. Roger.
Well,
just go. Just go.
We can. Oh.
Do you have a question?
I do. I just wonder how families are made aware of you. I mean, how, or is it through students, or?
We're actually glad that you guys asked. Because we are present at school sites, families get to meet us either before school, after school, mainly also through our school counselors, which we do meet on a weekly basis, and we get referred like that. But we also participate in Kinder Roundup. We get to meet every single new kindergarten family, and we introduce our service and what family advocates are and what resources we provide.
And I'm also part of the PI team at Los Osos Middle School, so I'm there 2.5 days, and that's where I meet a lot of the families because they either have, like, an elementary student or a high school student, and I'm there. That's kind of like the other place where I'm at 2.5 days, and then from there we go to, like, different school sites and to make it more accessible for the families to talk to us whenever they need some type of assistance.
So you're at, for you, Rocio, you would be at Baywood.
So I cover Monarch Grove, Baywood, Los Osos Middle School, Morro Bay High School, Del Mar, and then we kind of share Pacific Beach High School because of the coastal students, well as Pacheco.
And so then the load in town is greater because there are more schools.
Yes, definitely. So I do serve all San Luis Obispo schools. Mainly, though, I am on Mondays at Laguna, Tuesdays at Sinsheimer, and the homeless shelter, of course. Wednesdays, I'm actually stationed here at the district office, or that's when the other schools that I'm not able to attend, that's when they call me, and I go straight to them on that day. Thursdays, I'm at Seal Smith, and Fridays, I am Hawthorne, unless we have a safe meeting Friday mornings.
Right. And SARB on Wednesdays, or the first Wednesday.
So we're everywhere.
We also run the school site food bank distributions, and that's so like the families know that we're there because sometimes when they go pick up their kids, they see us and they're like, "Oh, I have a question for you," and that helps.
So you're just a presence that they're
presence,
and they feel able.
So
to
we're pretty
connect
much
you
everywhere.
You guys do so much, and it's so appreciated. And Rocio, I've known you since you were a little girl. When you were an EL.
I was an EL student, yes.
Yes, you were. Oh,
and now
congratulations.
My kids are going to the same school that I went to.
Right. Thank you for everything.
Oh, I wanted to ask, is there any talk of having you all at a specific school site? I know, like, for some of our empty classrooms, like, about number one, I want to thank you for coming to the Kinder Roundup because that is an incredibly valuable service. And I see Rocio at ELAC meetings, so she's comes to other after school events. But actually, on the site and on a school site station as opposed to off the site? Oh, I've just threw that out there.
Classroom?
No. I meant, your office
at
a school, where we have some school sites that have empty classrooms.
So certain sites are able to provide us specific sites, C.L. Smith being one of them for me. Some schools have also provided me another office, but I honestly prefer being front and center at the front office, just because as soon as the parents come in, they see a face to the name, and it's a great connection for them to have.
Okay.
Yes. But if privacy is needed, of course, the schools offer that for us.
Okay. I think I was asking more of a centralized office on the school site. So, because Rocio, you are at Sunnyside? Is that where your office is?
I was, but now I'm at all the schools, but I can only be there for half a day.
Gotcha.
So I'm not always like at a school site
that
I'm supposed to be, because full time.
Well, and also area of need. No, I appreciate what you do. You guys do a great job. So thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to address us on this? Yes. Mrs. Campbell.
So I really cannot, say enough about just how amazing our family advocates are. And, Mariana works at Laguna. She's there on Mondays. But she is accessible, I feel like 24/7. I'll email her and I say, hey, students come in. They're looking around for soccer cleats. Any info, any intel? And she responds and says, let me ask around. I got some contacts. Anything from, issues with gas cars or transportation or just she is, for us, I haven't met Rocio yet, but for us, it's just a wealth of knowledge of what's available in our community. And, as counselors, we're so in the moment at school that we're not always apprised on what's really going on and what's available. And so just an amazing resource. So I just really wanted to jump in and just talk about just how amazing it is. And I've been at other districts that don't have that, and it's incredible. So we do love them. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. All right. Thank you very much for taking the time.
You have a comment.
Oh, yes.
Thank you. I wanted to make a comment. I serve as the executive director of a nonprofit called Center for Family Strengthening, and one of my responsibilities is to manage the Link Family Resource Center that employs Rocio Hernandez. And we do that with the support of a nice contract here with San Luis Coastal School District. In addition to that, we get the Mental Health Services Act PEI funds to staff Rocio half-time at Los Osos Middle School. And I'm very proud to have been working with Mariana before she even became a family advocate. She was an intern for me in her senior year. So I wanted to thank you for highlighting the good work that they do with the families that support your students to be successful. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Thanks so much for taking the time to come.
Just one more point that I wanted to go over, and this is really in the way of next steps. So I think from this presentation, the counselors, the best practice, the family advocates, the MFTs and MFTIs, you see that we have a pretty rich counseling program here for our students and our parents. There are next steps, though, and in this district, we're looking at our MTSS system, so our multi-tiered systems of support. And this is something that a lot of districts are doing recently, and is a way to coordinate your services so the most in need are getting your most intense services. You'll see a triangle like this for academic needs. That would be RTI. You could see it for behavioral needs, where you'll see things like PBIS that Mr. Dowler has talked about. In our counseling department, we're putting together something like this for mental health needs across the district. So what are we currently doing, and who should we be supporting, and where do we see the holes? So an MTI or an MTSS system will be usually a triangle. It usually will have three portions. You'll have the largest of which is 80% to 90% of your students are receiving those services. In the middle is 5 to 15%, and then you've got the tip, those 5% of kids who need your most intense services. 80 to 90% are going to get prevention and proaction. It's tier one, and it's what you do across campus and in every classroom. Tier two is your research-based intervention. So it's tier one, but it's tier two supports as well. Now we're getting with small groups of kids and giving them support. And then tier three is your intense support. That's where you have your one-to-one counseling. You might be with a counselor, you might be with a school psychologist, you might be with an MFT. We might be doing social skills instruction. We might be doing a daily check-in and check-out. This is a starting point for us, but I think this is the next step for our counseling department. What are we doing? What works? Where are the holes? And how should we be identifying our kids for each of those levels? So I just wanted you to know that that's a next step for us and where we're going. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time tonight.
Ms. Frame, you have...
I do.
Don't go anywhere, Diane.
Sorry, Diane. Thank you. I'm going back to slide... is this slide four? And as I'm looking at the... you know, like the number of referrals based on counselor time. I'm wondering, how do you determine, like MFT 2.5, you know, but I'm looking at the referrals for some schools that are more, but they got, so are we basing it on student population or need?
So in terms of assigning the MFT to campus, we're really looking mostly at student population. You'll see more MFT days at a larger school and less MFT days at a smaller school. Pacific Beach is different, right? So that's a large amount at a very small school. But the actual allocation of the MFT has to do with the number of kids on that campus. We said that Los Osos Middle School is an anomaly. And the reason they are is that they get our MFT allocation, but they also have a PEI grant. So they have other services through a grant they earned years ago, and they've been really enjoying that service. So Laguna Middle School has had 25 referrals so far. And again, those are two PPS counselors coming together to determine who are the students in need. You know, who are the greatest need? And then Los Osos Middle School, 66. The high schools, we offer the drug and alcohol counseling as well. And that's really part of our behavioral supports. If a student has a drug and alcohol, drug or alcohol issue on campus, we immediately refer them to drug and alcohol counseling. So we've got the social and emotional referrals and then the drug and alcohol referrals there.
So
I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Well, I'm looking at, like, the Los Osos Middle School, and they have a PPS counselor, you know, 1.0,
yes.
And the Laguna is 1.8, but there's a... So it's because Laguna has an extra grant? Is that why they're getting more time?
Well, I'm because sorry. I was talking about the MFTI gave a site with 532 kids the same allocation as a site with 845. In terms of the PPS counselor, the 1.8 is because they are a larger school. I see that they're 845 and Los Osos Middle School is 532. I mean, there's a lot of things that we're looking at when we do that. They are 6, 7, and 8 versus a 7 and 8 at Laguna Middle School. Oftentimes, counselors will see more needs among 7th and 8th graders. So you'll see there's a little bit of a disparity there.
But so I guess what I'm saying is, would you then want to see more time at Los Osos because you have more referrals?
I see what you're saying, and that's something that we evaluate every year. Mr. Dowler works really closely and actually really takes the lead in putting in the MFTs. He looks also, so it will be referrals. He'll also look at suspension rates. Mm-hmm. He'll look at truancy. He'll look at chronic absenteeism. And he might offer a little bit more of MFT if they have those types of issues that need support on campus. But you're right. If I look at these numbers right here and I see 66 referred at Los Osos Middle School and 25 at Laguna, that
that is data that might help us decide what our allocation might be next year, or if we do need to tweak it mid-year, should funds. Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing, and Diane, I wish.
I'm up here a lot.
Oh, we had a well.
So with Laguna, with the 25 referrals, so we work closely with our MFT to see what is a comfortable number, because we don't want to be referring too many students and have a student be seen once every month, once every 2 months. So we're really looking at the students with the highest need, and they need oftentimes multiple contacts, you know, weekly, some biweekly, it varies. So we've really kind of honed it down to the highest need and have worked with them. So I don't know what the process is at Los Osos, but ours is formatted to what is going to be most effective for our MFT and for our students.
So maybe looking at that kind of, you know, the systematic between the two schools, because, you know, if I look at just the numbers here, it would look like a glaring inequity. The other thing is when we're looking at, I mean, I know, Diane, we talked about it, is when I'm looking at slides 3 and 4, mm-hmm. and it was, oh, where is that? Okay, and we were looking at allocation of based on total number. And what I did is I looked at the individual contacts divided by the student population. And I talked to Diane about this, and you see your percentages. And so even some of your Title I schools are lower on a percentage basis. Mm-hmm. And so if you were look at, you know, your allocation, it should be on need. And given, you know, like you said, that this is all change. Mm-hmm. But the one thing about this is that because, you know, the allocations were unknown at that time to base, nobody's kind of boosting their numbers up to try to get more time.
Right.
So, but if I look at, you know, the division for, you know, we clearly have, you know, schools that are higher need. But it's not just all Title I schools. Some of our schools, mm-hmm. you know, have... you know, in the low 20s, but they're still getting the same amount as a school that has like a 40%. Yeah. So just another area to look at.
Exactly. Thank you.
So,
agreed. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Right. Thank you.
I would just weigh in on that. This is really tricky because anyone who's been a teacher before knows that
present company.
Sometimes you could have 30 kids in your class, and life is pretty good because the kids are working and gelling and are focused and have minimal issues. In some years, you might have 22 kids, but it feels like you have 40. And so I think this is good data. It's really important to examine. I think the deeper question before we really dive into allocation is to really deepen the conversation about what the needs that are representing at the sites look like.
The qualitative kind
of
nature.
Like, okay, so are these really significant needs, or are these friendship groups? Mm-hmm. What are they?
Right.
And so it's tricky, and I think I appreciate the data, but I urge caution before we jump to these. But I think
excellent
it's
point.
A good step forward mm-hmm. to look at this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next, we have item 8.03, review and approve low-performing students block grant. Mr. Mayfield.
Good evening. The low-performing students block grant is a block grant, which means that everybody gets it. It isn't a grant proposal that you write, but rather you opt in with a brief plan or you opt out. We received our first allocation of funds in December, and this month we're to turn in an under 1,000 word, and that was more challenging than I thought it would be, under 1,000 word plan that said what we're going to do with the funds, how we're going to measure the funds, and how the funds connect to our LCAP. So basically this is one-time money from the state of California over 3 years, this year and the next two school years. It's for 146 eligible students within our district who are students that do not otherwise get funding. So not EL students, not SED students, not students with disabilities. So this is 146 students who are underperforming on assessments but not getting other sources of supplemental funding. So it's a very particular grant. Mostly what we're going to do, and any of the coaching references that are in there, these would be like outside consultants that we would hire to come in and work with teachers. We've already had a consultant come in to C.L. Smith this year and begin some of that work with teachers, which we found to be effective. We want to maximize the interventions that we already have in place, so we'll look at more targeted LLI for these particular students, ST Math, Bridges intervention programs. We'll measure it with our benchmark assessments that we already have in place and LLI assessments that we have as well, and then it's connected to the LCAP in several different ways. So, again, the plan tonight is not that the state will approve or deny the plan. You're just submitting what it is that you're going to do with the funds. And then the only other contact point with the state is in November of 2021, the final year of funding, where we report on how the activities went.
Right. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board? Right. Back to the board. Any questions? Then we need a motion to approve this grant.
I'll move approval of the Low Performing Students Block Grant.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, 8.04, Memorandum of Understanding for School Resource Officer.
Thank you. Several months ago, I was fortunate enough to listen to a webinar that was invite only, and it was a nationwide webinar on school safety and the elements and that these groups were suggesting the elements that are critical to keeping a school and a school district safe from things that happen out there these days. And so I spent several hours on this webinar. Deanna Cantrell, the chief of police from San Luis Obispo, invited me. And so I was able to listen in, and that's from that webinar I was able to learn about Safe and Sound Schools, which is a nonprofit group originating from a parent group from Sandy Hook Elementary, where they formed a business model that focused entirely on the key core elements of school safety. And so I was most impressed with them, and I shared with you what those core pillars are. And one of those core pillars is the need for a strong partnership with local law enforcement agencies. Not a loose partnership, but a strong partnership. And I realized that just a year and a half ago, we eliminated, on the news of the Diablo Canyon closure, we eliminated our existing contract with the city of Morro Bay and the city of San Luis for our school resource officers. And while that was a proactive response fiscally, I think it was a potentially rushed response in hindsight. But given that, I always like to look at things on the positive side. And so I've done my homework. I've looked at this very carefully, and I've met with the new chief of police, Jody Cox, at Morro Bay, along with the city manager, as well as Derek Johnson and Deanna Cantrell from the city of SLO. And we talked about the importance of re-embracing as a partner and really establishing the school resource officer model program. But I wanted to do it differently this time, which is why this MOU is written the way it is. The former MOU was loosely designed. It was a 50-50 model. And my staff, my administrators, myself, we were not pleased with how it was working. And I quite frankly felt I didn't have the levers I needed to do the things I needed to do to support my principals and the sites. And without going into too much detail with that, I really thought through the things that I believe we need in our school district to do this work of keeping our schools safe and designing these models effectively. So this MOU before you tonight reflects a 100% one FTE response. And that means I'm viewing the SRO not as a school year 180 days a year person. I'm looking at this person as a year-round commitment to our school district. And the reason for it is the SRO's job during the school year is to be at the school sites with kids and observing and interacting and engaging and helping us maintain safety. That's only a piece of it. The other piece of it is working on the back end with the districts to look at threat assessments across the district, examining every school site individually, really designing professional training modules for staff members that wouldn't otherwise be able to participate. I'm talking about a comprehensive approach. And so I've written, I want to commend the site administrators, Kyle Pruitt, Janet Gould in Morro Bay, working with Chris Dowler, along with Jody Cox, to design the needs underneath this MOU. And then what we did was shared it with Lozano Smith. The city of Morro Bay shared it with their attorney. We shared ours with Lozano Smith back and forth. This is a few iterations later. This is the MOU that I'm putting forward to you that has gone through sort of the proper channels, is embraced by the administrative teams. And more importantly to me is that this agreement reflects an SRO that isn't just devoted to the Morro Bay Del Mar schools, but is also committed to the district. So if there's a need in Los Osos, if there's a need in San Luis where we need their help, we get to call on them for help. They will also be key members. This SRO will also be a key partner as we design our school safety apparatus and our planning. So I will tonight I'm asking you to approve this agreement. And it's an agreement that I intend to look at and revisit every year and refine it. That said, I anticipate this to be an ongoing component of how we keep our kids and our staff safe. And so within a month, I expect to have the arrangement or the agreement with the city of San Luis completed. I'm currently working with Lozano Smith on that. And we should have the SRO agreement with SLO before you in April. So tonight I'm asking you to approve this MOU between San Luis Coastal Unified and the city of Morro Bay.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address us on this? Any questions from the board? Mr. Millar.
Thank you. It is a big improvement over the previous SRO arrangements without going into a lot of detail. And I appreciate the fact that they're going to train, Morro Bay is going to train additional officers to fill in, because when you're paying for an FTE, that includes, as we all know from teachers and things, vacation time. I'm a little concerned about the training element. I'm in paragraph, or they're not numbered, but there's it refers to training training assigned by the department or as provided by the district. And so there are some types of training where the officer would be tied up for a week or 2 weeks. And in that situation, would we then draw on the services of one of the additionally trained officers from the department?
Yeah, we did talk about this very topic with Dr. Pruitt and Janet Gould in the Morro Bay office. This very topic came up, and Chief Cox will make every effort to put the trainings for the officers in the summer months or non-school days. Good. So we'll work really closely with the schedules on that.
Good.
And he did say that when the SRO that's assigned to us, if they're sick or if they're unable to be there because of training, then they will assign us another officer to
Excellent.
Be there.
And I like the fact that the SRO will be available to respond to other schools in the district, which is very, very helpful. I'll yield for any other questions if anyone has any. If not, I'll move approval of the MOU with the Morro Bay Police Department for a school resource officer.
I'll second that. And I really appreciate that we're their willingness to work with us and the improvements that we're realizing over the previous MOU. I think it's great. All right. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
And just so you know, I've been invited to greet the Morro Bay City Council next week, assuming you guys approve tonight.
Great.
So I'll be there next Tuesday night.
We have approved. Thank you. All right, 8.05, award of bid number 300, Bellevue Santa Fe Charter and C.L. Smith Paving Project.
Yeah, so this was a design bid build project for the summer. It's the basically redoing the asphalt at both sites, Bellevue Santa Fe as well as C.L. Smith, something better done because of the smell and, you know, asphalt, those types of things during the summer months. So that's why it held off. And to be honest with you, Bellevue couldn't handle any more construction during the school year. So worked out well. We received three bids. We did have an issue in during the bidding process. So Apodaca Paving was the low bid in this case, had not personally signed it, but they did have their bonding agency had signed the bid. So we did speak with Deidre Sakai from DWK to ensure that we were okay to waive a minor abnormality like that. You know, of course, did sign it after the fact. She said we were well within our rights and laws to be able to do that. And so I'm presenting to the board today in terms of those bids. We feel good about the bids. They came in actually a little bit less than what they had anticipated, so hopefully that's a good sign for the future as we come up on some of our design bid projects as we move forward. So I'm asking the board to approve the award the bid tonight to Apodaca Paving, who was the low bidder for this project.
Anyone from the public out there, all that public out there, wishing to talk to us about this? All right, we'll come back. Any questions? Anyone wishing to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. I'll move approval of the contract. I can't say the name.
Apodaca.
Apodaca.
Okay, and I'll second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
8.06, certification to the Board of Education temporary athletic coaches.
It's spring sports season.
Yes.
So we have all the athletic directors have certified to you that our coaches have been trained. Just so you are aware of the law, our coaches have to have knowledge and competency in the area of care and prevention of athletic injuries, first aid, emergency procedures. They have to have coaching techniques, rules and regulations in the athletic activity being coached, and child or adolescent psychology. So to that end, our coaches are fingerprinted, TB tested, cleared through the H6 program for driving. They have CPR, they have first aid, they have child abuse mandated reporter certificate, their bloodborne pathogen certificate, their concussion in sports certificate, their sudden cardiac arrest certificate, and their CIF coaching class certificate through the National Federation of State High School Association. So all of these folks that you see before you have done all of those things.
They are thoroughly certificated.
Highly
all right.
Certificated.
Pardon me?
Highly certificated.
Highly certificated. Multiply certificated. Anyone?
Totally.
Thanks, Mark. Anyone from the public? Seeing none. We need to act on this. We need to approve these highly multiply certificated temporary athletic coaches. Mr. Millar, would you make that motion, please?
I would move approval of approval of the coaches so indicated in the agenda item as having been fully certified.
And I am certificated to second that motion.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you. Julie Lang, your time to shine has arrived. 8.07, our second interim report as of January 31st.
Okay, so I feel like I was just here reporting first interim. It feels like it was like a week ago. And here we are reporting second interim, which is reporting the changes to the budget that have occurred between October 31st and January 31st. The next time we'll present the changes will be at our estimated actuals, which are reported with the budget. And tonight we're going to be asking the board to approve the resolution that is attached, 12-18-19, certifying that the district will meet its financial obligations in the current year and two subsequent years.
It's going to be a big presentation tonight.
Yeah, it is not going to be a big presentation.
Because we need some more of those, Ryan.
Yeah. Actually, things have not. Things. That's okay.
I'm going to work
see if I can do the floor. Oh, that is rather large, isn't it? Okay.
Oh, look at that.
Okay. things haven't really changed that much since first interim, so this may be kind of quick. Obviously, our beginning balance doesn't change because it's what our ending balance was last year. Our revenues are have gone up about $800,000, and about half of that is due to the some of the one-time programs like Rick was talking about that we've gotten from new state and federal monies. And about half of that is for local revenues. We've gotten a few local grants, and we have extra interest, and the billing accounts and donations have gone up. On the other side of things, our estimated expenses have gone up by about $1,384,000. The majority of that is the transfer that we made to Fund 40, so it's actually still in our books, but it's not in the general fund. It's now in Fund 40 to cover future capital outlay projects. So because our expense is more than our revenue, we have a deficit of $1.2 million at second interim, bringing our estimated balance to about $15 million. I'll just keep going.
Yes.
You guys can see it on your screens,
yeah,
right?
We have it on our screens.
Okay. I hope I'm doing this in the right order. The fund highlights, I'm sure glad I printed this out for myself. Yeah. The highlights for second interim include property taxes at the same amount that they were at first interim. Actually, we don't get another estimate on property taxes until about April. So our property taxes are about 4.7% higher than they were in 17-18. Something that was published recently is that the Government Finance Officers Association recommends that districts keep a reserve of about 17% of budgeted expenditures. That's not the reserve for economic uncertainties, which is the required amount of 3%, but the 3% is really only about half of 1 month's salary and benefits. So they feel like, to be conservative, 17% is a better number to go by, or 2 months of expenditures. So our $14.8 million represents about 15% of our budgeted expense at second interim. And, of course, you know, by the time we end the year, there will be unspent funds that will fall into our ending balance. So I imagine it will be around 17%. Of the $14.8 million, $502,000 is considered restricted, so we can't use it for anything we want to. It has to be spent on specific purposes. We did get some new one-time funding, as I mentioned, for student support, classified employee professional development, and low-performing students. Nothing has been budgeted for the PG&E mitigation at this time. In this year or in future years, we will budget that when we really know that we're going to get it. Donations and billing accounts at second interim are up to $692,000. There we go. So really, the pie chart for revenues hasn't changed much since first interim. Our property taxes are at about 78% of our revenues. Included with the other LCFF revenue is the old categorical funding and the Education Protection Act funds, which is part of Prop 30. Included in that is also a transfer out to the Adult Ed Fund, which still is in our books, but it goes to Adult Ed, and the payment to the charter school for in-lieu taxes. And then we also get special ed revenue in this category.
Let's go to. It's the PDF version. Okay. All right. So everything else is about the same on revenues. On expenses, our certificated and classified salaries are at about 52% of all of our expenses. Administrative salaries remain at about 5%. Employee benefits are 20%, which does not include the STRS on behalf amount, which, as you know, is just on paper. And again, everything else is about the same as it was at first interim. But with these new revenues that have come in, it's bringing our salary and benefit amount to about 82% of revenues, which is good. This is a little bit hard to read, but this is the chart of our other funds. We're in pretty good shape everywhere. The negative amounts that you're seeing at the bottom of that for, like, the adult ed fund, that's just restricted balances that they're spending down that we didn't get revenue for, but they have to spend them down. The cafeteria fund, because salary and benefits are going up faster than the federal reimbursement rates, they're starting to deficit spend. So that transfers in is from the general fund of $176,000. That's just to cover, so they don't have a negative balance. And everything else is in good shape. You can see the $77 million as the Measure D final amount came in, and that's reported here. And the bond, or the Fund 51 bond and interest redemption is on paper only. That's just something we report. We don't actually see those revenues or the expenses for that.
Can I ask a question about the funds, please?
Sure.
So Fund 40, could you help me distinguish that capital outlay from, it's not maintenance, it's...
No, it's used for specifically for capital outlay projects, whereas maintenance is more like maintaining the buildings. Fund 40 can be used for, like, roofing, paving, things that maybe aren't covered under Measure D, but we still need to do.
Okay, that's kind of what I wanted to make sure. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And then in the multi-year assumptions, which Ryan is going to go over, our property taxes are projected with 3.5% increases, but also a $750,000 decrease because of the PG&E depreciation. Our one-time revenues and their expenses have been eliminated in subsequent years. We don't have the PG&E mitigation money in there. We also don't have any one-time mandated cost discretionary funds that were not budgeted for in Governor Newsom's budget. The Coast Cayucos MOU increases are included in future years. And on the expense side, the salary increases include step and column only and 7 estimated retirements. Benefits, we're being conservative and budgeting the 18.13% next year. It could be lower based on Governor Newsom's budget, but we're not certain of that yet, so we don't want to make that assumption. Health and welfare increases are budgeted at 5%. We have some equipment replacement budgeted in the general fund at $500,000, and we have a contribution ongoing to food services of $200,000. Is that the right one?
So I'm going to review the 10-year budget, so Lon, if you pull up the one that I sent to you, yeah. So, again, when we go through the first interim, second interim, remember these budgets that we go through over the course of the year basically expect us to spend every single penny that we budgeted, right? And so what we know is that doesn't happen. But that's the way it looks on paper during those budget cycles. So the 10-year budget was created to really show what we really think the end of the year is going to be like. So, but even within that 10-year budget, there's still, you know, some areas that we, to be honest, I try to be conservative. So 2 years ago, we had a 5% property tax increase. Last year, it was a 4.7. Outgoing years, it's 3.5. Okay, so because of that average long term, and those are the main sources that we receive in terms of our revenues. So it's very important. It has the built-in, the Diablo Canyon. It does not currently have the mitigation funds, but we know we're supposed to be receiving those funds. It's just when are we going to receive them? So at some point, as soon as we know, and we're actually working with the county right now of San Luis Obispo in terms of trying to figure out what that's going to look like in the mitigation payments. And so as soon as we know, we include that information in. So that's something that, you know, we're going to be including in next year's budget, some of these increases that we're doing at our surplus sites for utility charges. So those contracts, those things. So as information becomes real to us, we try to include those. And so, you know, just from a bottom line standpoint, I think the key that Julie pointed out today that we're currently at 82%. So that's we're in good shape. That has been painful over the past 3 years to get to that point. Right, so we've, you know, $2 million cuts at the district office 2 years ago, 3 years ago. We had, in terms of really just cutting back, you know, things like the SROs, those types of things that we had to do at the time because we didn't know. But we've kind of come around. We have ourselves in a great budget. You know, I feel like a good budgetary situation, at least as you look in terms of our projections, especially when you enter the mitigation funds. It's going to look much better than it does today. So that said, you're always going to find me super cautious about adding back positions. So because we can quickly turn the tide in terms of personnel very quickly, and that percentage can rise dramatically. So we already know going into next year we have a couple of special ed needs. So probably 2.5 to 3.5 FTE just because of sheer size of classrooms for those. San Luis Obispo High School, right now today, based on their current enrollment, 3.5 teachers next year need to be added to that campus. We're also looking at some of those Title I elementary sites in terms of, you know, we had some abnormalities at a couple grade levels that we might want to add some staffing to. I'm going to be presenting that to the board, sharing that with the board so that you can kind of see. We're working at looking at the SDC kids and how they impact general ed classrooms, seeing if we can tie those in right for inclusion. So a lot of those, but that's all adding staffing. So we're gonna sit down and talk about intervention teachers and our intervention plan, and again, adding staffing. So all of those things have to be digested. It has to be part of our budget plan going forward. Tonight is just about second interim. So we will be bringing all that back with LCAP and our survey and input from staff and parents and kids that you heard tonight, incredible kids from the mouth of babes, right? They tell you exactly what's happening at those sites. And we should definitely listen to kids. So, again, I think we're in a good financial situation. Ongoing, our projections look good, much better than they did a couple of years ago, right, as we entered into those budget talks. And, I mean, this was we saw $5, $6 million deficits down the line. So because of the boards, you know, again, making the right decisions to get us where we need to be, I feel like we're gonna, you know, we can kind of weather the storm, and now it's picking what I think for us as we enter LCAP as well as budget seat. What are the most impactful things we can do for kids? Those are the things we need to focus on, and if we're gonna do some add backs, and of course that's gonna be the board's decision based on the data that we'll bring forward to you. So questions about the 10-year? We've gone over it a lot in terms of, you know, you kind of know those things, but if there's any individual questions, of course, don't hesitate to ask. That personnel, keeping that personnel cost at 85% is really kind of that focus. So we're in good shape this year. And a lot of that has to do with the one-time monies that we've received. So it's also key to know some of that money that you see at the bottom that falls to the bottom line in terms of overall reserves, some of that is dedicated to certain causes. So a lot of this one-time money that we received tonight, you heard about the low-performing grant, those types of things, it's not just general fund money. It's money that's set aside for those. But even with that said, again, I feel like we're in a good shape. I'm hoping that Governor Newsom's, STIRS proposal goes through. That's helpful to us as a basic aid school district, right, community-funded district, and that will help that percentage. 20% of our budget goes to benefits. I mean, if I was to show you that slide 10 years ago, it was probably 10, 15%. I mean, it's going to continue to rise with health care as well as just STIRS and PERS and benefits, which it's good, but people need to realize it takes a bigger, you know, we have more personnel costs with less people, which is a difficult thing to, you know, to work with.
Mrs. Roger has a question.
I do have a I do have a question. It's not on the 10-year budget.
Uh-huh.
It's actually sort of out in the weeds.
Yeah.
On the previous page where we look at the various funds. And I wonder if you could speak to me. I believe the Werthaler Foundation, Fund 73, was a bequest to Morro Bay High School.
Yes.
Was it for student scholarships?
Yeah, it's student scholarships at Morro Bay High for Morro Bay High School students.
Could you explain to me how that is being drawn down? What is
so they wanted that in a special fund held by the district that could only be used for those Morro Bay scholarships. So that's why we created a separate fund for that cause. And so each year, they did not want this to be put into like an outside fund that raised a lot of money and you only spend the interest. They wanted to spend down the fund. So the estate basically said, hey, the money's there, spend it down. If it gets spent in 20, 30 years, that's okay. That'll be the gift that she gives to those students. So each year, the Morro Bay High, their counseling staff, their principal, and I think some of the staff members have a committee that gets together, and so they draw some of the funds out and they give to kids. So it's a pretty big donation that they give to students that goes over their 4 years of college.
Is there any particular way that they decide which students are selected?
I'd have to find out from Dr. Pruitt and let you know. Yeah, I mean, we can share that in Friday notes, but I want to say that they do a boy and a girl, that they pick a female and male student.
And then they give a significant scholarship.
It's a significant scholarship, yeah. I want to say it's like $10,000, per student type of thing. So it's a good scholarship for them. They want to really make a difference for those kids.
Okay. Well, that was a very generous donation to Morro Bay High School.
Very.
By a former employee. Thank you.
Any other questions? Right. This is a resolution, so we need a motion to adopt, a second, and then a roll call vote.
I'll move approval of the second interim.
I'll second.
All right. We have a motion and a second.
And again, kudos to Julie and her staff.
We're
very, very fortunate. Our fiscal department does a great job. To be in the place that we are has a lot to do with their bookkeeping.
Thank you, Julie.
If I can, I just want to thank Julie and Ryan for their answering the questions I had.
Mrs. Roger, for the roll call vote.
Aye.
Oh, aye.
Mr. Millar.
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Aye.
Mr. Buckman.
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Okay. So it will be adopted 5.
5 with 2 absent.
2 absences, yes. Thank you. Okay. Next we have proposed revisions to board policy 1312.1, and this is a first reading.
Thank you. Yes, the presentation you've all been waiting for.
Woo-hoo.
Board policy on complaints against district employees. So this is the first reading, so I want to just bring your attention to a couple of adjustments here. You'll notice in red is the gamut legal advice on a few additions here in order to revise this policy. You'll notice that your board subcommittee revised the first sentence. Really about the tone, not that crazy about the tone, that it said kind of accepts responsibility for providing a means by which the public can hold employees accountable for their actions. So I think they did a nice job of recommending some adjustments there. You'll notice the red sentence from Gamut in legal advice, the addition from the board subcommittee about let's work to resolve it informally first, with the next paragraph saying that if a problem remains, then the individual should submit a formal complaint. The next paragraph is the addition of the superintendent designee developing regulations which permit the public to submit the complaints. And then the addition there with the final paragraph as well about keeping identity confidential. So tonight is the first reading. Our typical practice has been to bring it back for a second read. Happy to answer any questions about it.
Mr. Millard.
Thank you. I guess it may be something that will be addressed in the administrative regulations. I have a little bit of concern about handling informally. handling a complaint informally and resolving it informally. I mean, I think in the real world, that's certainly how we would want to handle things. But I'm a little concerned if we do it informally and there's no record that we've even received the complaint and addressed it and it's been resolved. So is there, can we anticipate that the ARs will incorporate procedures so that at least the fact that the complaint was made and the substance of it is going to be recorded in some respect, so that if subsequently a person complains that we didn't take the complaint seriously? And I'm part of this is because of recent, I was in San Diego for a week, and there was a lot of discussion around San Diego Unified and their complaint handling and whether they were doing it appropriately or not. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't need an answer to that, but I'm not sure it needs to be addressed in the language of the policy, but it might. I don't know. That's just a concern I have, and I look forward to hearing a little clarification about that.
I think it's a great point that we do encourage detailed documentation of any time administrators, especially, or teachers are handling complaints and documenting and keep track of how it was handled. So it's a good suggestion to look in the AR and make sure that's spelled out.
Anything else? Any other comments? This is the first reading, so we'll bring it back. All right.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Next is our action consent calendar. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.03, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 9.04, approval of warrants and payroll. 9.05, acceptance of donations. 9.06, approval of foreign exchange organizations. 9.07, agreement between San Luis Obispo County Community College District and San Luis Coastal Unified School District. I'd like a motion, please, on 9.01 through 9.06.
I'll move items 9.01 through 9.06.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Mr. Buckman.
So I thought it was worthwhile just pulling this out because I'm so impressed, and our relationship with Cuesta keeps growing. But when we talk about adding an agricultural business class, I think it's really important, and I think it's important because it gives us a business class, and I don't think it's limited to agriculture. I think the practices in agriculture are going to serve our students in any business they go into, and I think it's important. Also, I think it's important because we've got some really iffy stuff going on in the world of agriculture right now. We've got tariffs. We've got field workers that are maybe facing deportation, so I thought this was good timing as well. So I'll move approval of 9.07.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you. All right. Anything? Can we go back to 10.01? We're not there yet. The one we just... Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Anything for advance agenda? All right. Board reports? All right. We are adjourned until our study session next week. March 14th, and our closed session will begin at 9 a.m. Okay.